Blog Talk Radio.
Sports in Depth, Blog Talk Radio, on the Trust in God Radio Network. It's a Sunday sports wrap-up time. You know, we begin every show here on Sports in Depth with a prayer. The one, only true God. We pay homage to Him. We open up with the iconic John Coltrane playing his legendary piece, Dear Lord. So without further ado, bow your heads. Father God, coming to pay homage to your darling son and you. Doc Stanley, Sports Devil, Blog Talk Radio, with the Trust in God, your network. It's prayer time, gang. Dear Lord, thank you for another day, another Sabbath. Remember the Sabbath, keep it holy on the seventh day. God rest. We thank you, Lord, for all things so far. Thank you for last night. You weren't getting up last night laying down. We hope and pray the Lord that your way is our way in our hearts. We thank you for our family, our friends. I just said, Lord, move things the larger things of man. Let your way be our way. We are not all by yourself. And we just take this time out and say thank you. It happens. And that you know, besides your love, you also appreciate your grace and mercy. We ask these blessings, Lord, blessings, in your darling son Jesus. Amen. Now with that, come on back in. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth, Blog Talk Radio, on the Trust in God Radio Network. Gang is all rounding up here. Jump, 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 Jay! The studio, H. Red Brown Loss, the crew, a lot of things happening this week. You know, the Olympics is wrapping up. And, you know, this month is kicking. It's the 23rd this month. Shortest month of the year, 23rd this month. And, we always open up to remembering the birthdays. Yesterday, birthday of the greatest dunk of all time, the most exciting player I saw it day in, day out. Let's take time out and say happy birthday to Dr. J. 22nd. Tell the story of Ms. Lindsay when she got him, when she had Julius. You know, he was born on the 22nd. It was George Washington's birthday. And it was just about with a nurse that she named him George. She named his son George. I named him mine Julius. Julius Winfield Irving Jr. As a junior, went to UMass. The rest is history. Led the nation in rebounding. Was a member of that famed 2020 club. 20 rebounds, 20 points per game. Went to the Knicks. Who kind of sucked and turned him down. Played for the Virginia Squires. Got drafted by the Milwaukee Bucks. Traded to the Nets from the Squires. The rest, they say, history. Won the MVP the last 3 years of this WNBA. Won the NBA championship. last year and two of the last 3 years in the league. He was the sixth name, one of the 50 greatest players. Questionably. And if it's this game, there's nobody great. He wants to read the quote. Well, he said at 26 years old. I can imagine anybody better than me. Right. 24th as much. Bill Russell, 7 champions, 13 seasons, the biggest one in NBA history. The second as much, Arthur Ashe. As I said, he has to be twice as good. He has to change. And a lot of some other birthdays that are much for you. Hey, Aaron on the fifth. Stanley, what's that? Mark's up, ready? Let's go, man. What's the birthday? And we will now get a panel and talk some more about sports. To the crew, Potato Baby Lois, A. Fred Brown is here.
Yep, and I'm here. Present and accounted for.
Jump Shot Jonesy, the Hoopster, is in the house live from Puerto Rico. Just getting back from Puerto Rico. There's none other than Cincinnati Shingles will be joining us. But the big news tonight is that for a long time, I haven't been able to play this opening. We told you the latter part of last year that Mel Smith Jr., Mel Cosell Smith Jr., a.k.a. Little Kelco, a.k.a. Rooney, a.k.a. Ho, and, you know, Mel went through a open heart surgery. He wasn't allowed to do a whole lot of strenuous things, and it can be strenuous here being on this panel, but for the longest time, his absence was sorely missed here. We was hoping to have him back a lot sooner, but they say, gang, that there is a Mel Cosell Smith Jr. sight on the panel. That is true. That means that finally, I can get an intro.
I see something, yes. I see something, yes. Yes. Yes.
So, without further ado. Well,
Don't let Doc cause you any more stress.
And no stress. Ado, bringing you into the Sports and Depth Nation, the one and the only. You know, we've missed him dearly, and he's definitely been missed. Mel.
Welcome back.
The Swami himself. Whoa. The Swami.
It's showtime, Rooney. Bring us in, baby.
Thank you, fellas, for the good wishes and the kind words. It's a pleasure to be back. Pleasure to hear all of your voices. And if I may say that the Sports In-Depth Nation is here. The Sports In-Depth panel is here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I am here. We're here courtesy of the Trust in God Radio Network. And the straw that serves the drink is indeed here, and that's the incomparable Doc Family. Take it away, good Doc.
This is unreal. He hasn't said this in months, and now you know I run the dungeon. I get a call over, but Doc, I'm waiting. You know, I'm chopping at Doc. I'm here. Doc, I've been hitting him, and it is. You have no idea, Mr. Smith. You have no idea, Little Coco. You have no idea, Rooney. You have no idea. Mel Cosell Smith Jr., how thankful to God and blessed we are to once again hear that voice in that intro. Welcome home, Mooney. You've been sorely, dearly, truly missed.
Definitely.
Well,
definitely you've been,
Doctor.
Yes.
I appreciate it. Like I said, I appreciate you and the guys with all your good wishes and incredibly kind words. And, Doc, I have to tell you, man, I certainly appreciate every moment and minute that I am here and healthy. And it hasn't been the same without you guys. So I'm ready to rock and roll right about now, Doc.
Yeah, stay at the ring.
Lay it down on the line.
Stay at the ring, okay?
Rock and roll.
Stay at the ring.
As the Hoopster and Company would say, I do indeed see something. Yes.
Welcome back. Yeah, I know you do. Definitely. And make
Rooney,
a wish, too, okay? Make a wish.
And Rooney kicked it off, you know, because Rooney had a purpose. Okay, Rooney, you know, you were chopping at the bit. You saw the Super Bowl. And, you know, I saw a piece here earlier before I got on the show. Everybody was talking about Sherman, the cornerback, and what he said. And there were these two little kids. Really touched me. I saw a video on the Queen Latifah show. What a great show. What a great artist she is, too. And the little boy said something that is so profound, as we are in Black History Month week, you know, the shortest month of the year. The recognition of African Americans, what they've done, and you know, their feelings toward Sherman just validated that racism is something that's taught and it's not natural. And I remember the little boy was talking, and he talked about the similarity he felt toward Sherman, and he reminded him of, I forget, Rex Ralph or something like that. He says, and you know, and the quote was, "No, just because you're perceived as a bad person doesn't mean you're a bad person." And then he said something else. He says, "You know, I think he's my favorite Seahawk. He's an elite football player, and I love him." This is a 9-year-old kid, you know, white kid, and I love him. And you know, Queen, who said, "Well, you know, let me see if I can get him on the phone. Y'all come up here. Let me see if I can get him on the phone." And then his little sister too. They just they just broke down. It just shows you that, you know, love has no color, and it's just sad that, you know, you realize that racism is something. My beloved mother always said, you know, when the kids go down to the Ferris wheel, they don't say, "I don't want to get on that black horse." They just, the horse is a horse. And person, and athletes have to understand, and I think they do, the profound effects they have. But this was very touching and to see and just validate that, you know, the problem of racism is not something that you're born with. It's something that you're taught and that's induced. And okay, the little boy, the last thing he said about Sherman was, you know, he's my favorite Seahawks, Seattle player. He's a great football player, and I love him. And in a lot of ways, Rooney, let you start, but I think we ought to say the same thing we feel about you, Rooney. We love you, man, and we miss you dearly, my friend. And we let you kick it off and start the Super Bowl. Hey, what's on your mind, Rooney? Let it flow, baby.
Well, thank you, Doc. Again, it's a pleasure to be back with you and the crew. Missed you all more than you could ever know. Trust me. Missed being back with our amazing sports in-depth and nation audience. And, well, look, I'm going to get right to the point, okay? So the Super Bowl, I guess it's kind of old now.
Who you going for, Rooney? Who you picking?
Well,
who you picking?
I thought Seattle would win, but I had no idea it was going to be an absolute spanking.
Well, you got that one right, Rooney. I'm surprised.
I guess Seattle. Well, you know, Doc could tell you, man, that I always kind of favor the defensive crew that has the bigger defense. When I say big, I don't mean in size, but you know what I mean. The stronger defense is what I should say. So I usually will take the defensive crew over the offensive crew. And speaking of no offense or defense, the New York Knicks blew another
lead. Oh, got some bad news about that. Wait till I got something to tell you about that. Going to hurt
you.
You
know, I'm with it, yeah.
Doc, I got some bad news on
that. Night too. You know, Jumpshot Jones is with us too. And we talked last week, and Carmelo talked about a 14-point lead that they had. And last night I'm watching the game, and they're up by 15. They're up by 5 at the half. And then I come back, you know, it's, you know, in the words of Harold Wilson Jr., it's just sad and touching. And you know, Rooney, you can leave us on this too. I mean, it's a bad division. They still have an outside shot. I just can't, you know, with Jumpshot Jonesy and the hoops here, the injuries are the big key. You know, Carmelo can't carry the whole load, but I mean, what a difference. And Chandler, have you ever seen a big guy miss so many? How can a guy that tall keep missing dunks?
That, Doc. But
he
like
needs practice.
Team.
Need practice.
Yeah.
That's what he needs. Practice.
Mm-hmm.
Practice.
You know what happened, man? It's like the whole crew, gentlemen. It's like the whole crew regressed since last year. Schumpert regressed. You don't even – I mean, It looks like the guys are just running up and down the court to go through the motion. I mean, that's why they're trying to. That's why they're trying to pay off Metal World and let him walk, because the guys just run up and down the court, not really doing much.
Here's the question, gang, and you started, Mooney, then. How much of this, then, and you, tremendous word, Mooney, regress, how much of this is, I mean, can we, how much of this, and we got the Steno, we got the Hoopsa, we got the Jump Shot Jonesy, Gino, and Mike Howard, and what's up with you?
Right here.
How much of this, my basketball people start this, which you can, how much of this, then, do we have to put on the coach? I mean, I think there's responsibility.
Nothing on the coach, man. Nothing on the coach.
He's not getting in their faces like he used to.
Nothing on the coach is the players. The players who are playing like little leagues. I mean,
well, he should be getting on them.
Yeah,
when
I
play with coaches,
should...
they got on me. You don't play, you sit the bench. That's it. You don't play. That's it. You don't listen, you sit the bench.
Dusty, how much of this, then? Let's go back to... you go back to little David and Goliath, but we don't want to go that far back, Dusty. But let's go back to I mean, Dusty, then, you're right. I mean, there should be a certain amount of pride that Joe DiMaggio's great line, why do you play so hard? He said, because it may be the first time somebody ever seen me play. Dusty, why is there not this pride? Where there's not this feeling of obligation that they should, you know, play up to their standards? I mean,
it's what we call a cancerous mentality of just going through the motions, man. You know, you take a guy like Derek now, who's retiring in 2015. He gave us 20 years of first-class performance. He was booed when he was sick. The fans didn't understand that. The man was injured several times. The man was pushing himself before it was time to come off the disabled list to get on the field and help his team win, and he pushed himself. His ankle broke a second time because he wasn't ready to come back to play. He got injured. Look at remember the catch he made in the freaking foul territory. He leaped into the stands. Some other player would have said, "The hell with it, that's a foul ball." He leaped in there, took it, got 3 stitches under his jaw, hit his right eye, hurt his shoulders. He played the next day. This is what's missing in the freaking Knicks.
You're right, Dusty.
Intensity. That's what's missing. Intensity.
Carmelo Anthony, perhaps you might say very slightly, is a prototype.
Huh?
Is a prototype of what Jeter was trying to do for the Yankees. Okay, he can't carry him.
Wow.
We are going back to when Patrick Ewing became the first round draft choice of the Knicks. Patrick carried the Knicks that entire season. He paid for it with knee surgery. And that's exactly what the hell Carmelo Anthony is doing. He could do so much. Now, I read an article the other day where it said that, hey, I'll stay here if you bring me better players. What does that tell you? He knows that these dudes are slapping off. Now, here's another thing. What was the expediency of the freaking Knicks to get rid of Jeremy Lin? That dude was a hell of a player. They wouldn't pay him the money or whatever the hell it was.
That was another player
that could have carried the Knicks along with Carmelo, but all them other deadheads are just going through the motions, man. Jerry Reese said something the other day about the Giants. He told the veterans, Tuck and all them guys, start looking for free agency. That means you're going, Jack. I'm going to get me some new meat. That's the same syndrome that you have to go with the Knicks. If Woodson is a weak manager, whatever, has them behind closed doors, well, then Good luck, Winston. Pick up your pink slip, too. Get somebody here who's going to kick butt and going to make you guys play because you're embarrassing us, man. And that's the way, that's the way I see it.
And they've become an embarrassment, Doc and crew. And then not only have they become an embarrassment, I mean, they've got, you know, it's one thing, Doc, and I don't have to tell you, you got me into this business. You know, it's one thing to be a bad team. It's something entirely different to be an embarrassing team. And it's something even worse than that when you're a bad team, an embarrassing team, and a boring team.
And then on top of that, for the last five last-place teams, the last-place teams.
Exactly. Losing to the last-place teams also.
Hey, listen.
That tells you.
These guys are not embarrassing. They're what Pop always said. They're embarrassed skin. Jumpside Jonesy, come on in here, baby. What's happening here? What's happening with this, baby? Talk to Jonesy. What's happening? What's the story here?
Hey, listen, nothing or no one stands still. Can you hear me, Doc?
Yeah, we're here. Just keep talking, baby. We'll let you know.
No one or nothing stands still. Okay, so when you go from last year to this year, what progress has the team made in and of itself? And then look at the rest of the conference. You've seen Indiana upgrade. You know Miami is already the champs. You've seen Toronto improve, who's in the division.
Yep.
You've
first
even
place.
Seen your mates in our borough of Brooklyn improve.
Yeah.
And so no team, unfortunately, the Knicks have seen their talent level diminish, and they do have flaws. They do have flaws. No, it is not the coach's fault. However, this is what he's been given. And one of the biggest flaws the Knicks have is in their backcourt right now, unfortunately. And they have an offensive situation right now that requires one player to basically shoot 25 to 30 times for them to be competitive.
Yo, he's
they
getting.
They don't get any. Where else do they get points?
Not hungry.
I think the bottom line is, what happened is that two things here. They can't play, or last year was a mirage. I mean, last year, everybody
was talking about mirage. What happened was they all regressed.
Last year wasn't.
Chandler doesn't look like the same guy. Schumpert doesn't look like the same guy.
He's hurt again. He got hurt again.
Like the
he got that same knee again, Doc.
Come on.
He got hurt again.
Well, my thing is, I'm looking at Chandler. I just can't understand a guy. I mean, you're talking about regression, too, and that's about going back and trying to. Oscar Robertson told me you're only as good as your weakest link. And Chandler, I mean, the guy should be practicing free throw. Guy can't, I mean, he's hard time making dunks, but we understand he's there for defense. But, I mean, the guy doesn't make his free throws. Now he's been missing dunks. And you know, the line that you just hit, Rooney, regression, and which you may think last year was a mirage. Last year, outside of Carmelo Anthony, last year was a mirage. I mean,
bad teams find new ways to lose games. I mean, now we got Chandler goaltending with his head. That's it. It's all over. I mean, what else can you say, Doc? I mean, they're finding ingenious ways to lose games.
Remind you of the Knicks back in the 60s, you know what I mean? If there's any way to lose, they'll find out a way to do it. Doc Stanley, Sportsnet Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Red Network. Pete, did you join us from Florida? I'm looking for Pete to join us. Okay, 3 feet didn't get in there with those jumpers. As you know, last night, big things I want to talk about real quickly. You know, Canada won the gold medal in the Olympics. Both the ladies and the men won it. Women won 2-0, and then Canada came back and beat the USA 1-0, sent them to the bronze game, and the bronze medal game, which they didn't win. But the Olympic history was obtained by American 18-year-old Malika Shiflin. I may be saying that wrong. She's the first. She's the youngest ever to win the Olympic Shalom. And the judge that was sent, and what got me to when I told you about these two kids, their love and affection for Sherman and the way they talked about him and everything. And I'm not the kid, you know, I said, hey, I love him. And they were just so, and it just shows you that, you know, color has no place in the heart when the heart is right. And she, when she came down and she completed, she didn't know if she had won. And what happened, the second place winner, the second place, the third place winner from Austria, and the second place winner was one of her heroes. What they did, Marlene, I'm pronouncing it, Catherine and Marlene, the names, I don't get the last name. And what they did, they went over and just raised her hand to signify that she had won. She was the champion. I thought that was a tremendous gesture on their part. You know, here's this girl. I mean, it's like, you know, me finding out I won the batting championship, and here comes Willie Mays and Roberto Clemente to say, hey, congratulations. So she's the youngest ever to win the Shalom event. And ironically enough, you know, the country that has the second most gold medals in the Winter Olympics is the United States of America. And just want to take a hat off to her. Canadian team, both the men and the women, both won Olympic gold. Our man, Shani Williams, didn't come up this year. We'll go back to him. But that was something I thought was very touching. You know, she wasn't assured, and the runner-ups went over. Second and third place winners, silver and gold. They're both from Australia. They went up, raised their hand, signifying that she was the champion, youngest ever to win it. And we salute her here at Sports in Depth. And Derek Jeter, I mean, Dusty, you brought him up. You can't say enough about him. Derek, and I've said this a million times here on the air. I've written about it. Told Derek to his face. Derek Jeter was number two because he's second to none as a player, as a person. Everything Joe DiMaggio was supposed to be, everything Mickey Mantle was, a real live American hero. You can add to the fact that he accomplished things that neither of them did. Joe DiMaggio never got 3,000 hits. Mickey Mantle's not a lifetime 300 hitter. Derek Sanderson Jeter, class, character, and just a great human being. And I tell the story, the epitome of Derek is not so much what he does on the field, but he's the only Yankee ever to get 3,000 hits, only Yankee ever to win an All-Star Game MVP. But I never forget this. His first year in the league, me and the incomparable Larry Hardest, the greatest sportscast in history of African American radio, and John Starks, one of Looney's favorites and one of the great, great players.
One of my guys,
history.
Great guy.
Good,
guy.
Good
you know,
people.
I talked
people.
To him many times. He's a real
good
deal, John, a great guy.
Big
and,
movie
and,
fan, too. Love movies.
Yeah. Oh, well, you know this. Everybody's done it. And we're up in Harlem. Thanksgiving of 96, we're up in Harlem, me, John, and Larry Hardesty, and in walks Derek Sanderson Jeter. Derek comes in all year, okay, working with the kids and giving back. Dr. King's line, service to others, eventually pay for your space unit. That's Muhammad Ali. And the great line by Dr. King, life's most persistent, most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? And you take your hat off not only to Derek, but his family and those two kids. Those Sherman fans, you take that, you have to up to their parents. And you know, you can't say enough about Derek as a player, as a person. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth, Block Talk Radio, on the Trust and Guard Radio Network. Looking for all the gang to get in here. Got some boxing coming up. I'm looking
and
for
his turn, his Turn 2 Foundation is doing great with all the kids and getting, you know, getting them into school, away from drugs. I mean, scholarships. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah.
The whole not, did you folks read his letter? I got
yeah,
a copy of it. His letter,
tremendous
letter.
Well, you know, the thing is, you know, Jeter's favorite player is Dave Winfield. And
yeah,
he wanted
to be like
Winfield. He originally won number 13.
That's why he became a Yankee.
Number 13 because it was Winfield's number backwards. And he wanted to do that. And then, you know, talk about Dave Winfield. I mean, here's a guy who has to buy every major sport in this country. The NBA, the ABA, the NFL, the AFL. I even heard there was a woman's softball team that bet about someplace in New Jersey, one of them on the team. So everybody wanted Dave Winfield. We got boxing.
Well, the Dave
about.
Winfield Foundation is still going great guns. So
yeah.
We started with
I mean,
the Yankees and he prolonged it.
I believe
Dave Winfield was one of the few athletes to get drafted in the three major sports, baseball, football, and basketball.
I just said that. He's the only one ever. He's the only athlete in America to ever get drafted by every major sport.
Yeah.
Okay, the NFL, the AFL, the NBA, CBA, National League, Red League. I tell you, there were tiddlywinks teams that wanted to say win for. Doc Stanley, Sports at Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Network. We're talking boxing. We're talking baseball. We're talking football. We're saluting Derek Jeter and happy birthday to Dr. J and Eddie Murray and Floyd Mayweather Jr., who will be celebrating the birthday on the 24th, which is Willie Mays' number. And just so happy. We're just saying welcome back, Mooney. We're looking for, okay, we got Harold Weston here. GW Mike, are you here with us yet? too. GW Mike with us. Okay. Looking for Lady A to join us, but the gang's all here.
I'm here, Doc.
Hopefully.
I'm on here.
Okay, there she is, Lady A's in the house.
Yo,
and we had something that was we talked about the women on tonight. When you hear that, Lady A, you've made it there. You got both of your boyfriends here, Harold Weston and the Rooney is back.
The Swami's back.
Something. I need something.
I'll make a wish.
Watch that, Blog Talk Radio. I trust the God Network. Don't leave anybody, but we'll be right back in a minute. We'll talk some more sports. The gang is all here. It's a special day because Rooney is back. Rooney, we didn't miss you. We missed you a whole hell of a lot. Doc Stanley, watch that, Blog Talk Radio.
Show, Doc. No question about it, man. I miss this whole incredible crew, no doubt.
Well, we miss you too. Don't move, Rooney.
And by the way, Doc, I don't want to be any surprise that, you know, since my absence, I suddenly have a lot to say.
Go ahead, Rooney. What's that, Rooney?
I said in my absence, Doc, I've suddenly developed a lot to say and chopping at the bit. You know, I just want to be brief. You know, we have the, like I said, the Knicks have played lousy. Yeah, almost their entire starting five, but Venture has regressed. Carmelo seems to be the most of the days the only dude who's playing his heart out and living up to, well, as close as somebody can live up to a contract that pays that much money. But at least you can see the guys trying most of the time.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, now.
Playing power forward.
Yeah.
Playing power forward, too. That's a hell of a tough spot to play.
Point guard, man. They really need a point. They need a guard badly. Really need somebody to
score. You know, it's funny because now we're talking about the Yankees and the great Derek Jeter, number two. And, you know, and one thing about Steinbrenner, you know, Steinbrenner's the kind of guy, you know, he would go out and get what was needed. And, you know, you just got to question why is Dolan, you know, not trying to get the pieces that it did. And then here's the thing, too, I think, Dev Jonesy, we gotta look at the coach. If he knows what he needs, why is he not talking to Dolan or the GM about filling his needs, Jonesy?
Because they don't have any money.
Got that right.
They don't have any money.
Period.
You can talk to,
you know what?
If you don't have the money,
you
can't bring in certain players.
People
Knicks,
are saying, what do you mean they don't have the money? And what you're
Knicks
saying, Jonesy?
The Knicks are capped out right now.
Okay.
They're capped out. They have to – it's addition by subtraction. They have to clear space on their cap right now to get some players, to get some talent, to be able to put around Mr. Carmelo Anthony, who
sure
can opt out at the end of the year. They do
and
need
plus,
some
Doc, they got to wait till 2015 to clear all that salary. They can't trade for nobody or sign free agents until 2015.
Okay, now hold on, gang. See, now, everybody listen, this is why I brag about my crew. I bust my chest. These are the best people in the world. They can handle sports. But you listen here, you learn. Okay? So people say, well, why? That's why. The cap, they are. Jerry, the great Jerry Reese told me something, Dusty, and we'll never forget Jerry. Jerry talked to us a day before he went into the last interview he did. And Jerry said, you know, people understand there are certain things that are restrictions that don't allow you to do certain things. Now, it's hard for a team to win a Super Bowl too, because it's going to wind up with a different draft choice. There's certain restrictions. And Jonesy and the Hoops have just told you that due to cap situations, you just can't go out. And I think this is a big reason, too. In baseball, they did certain things. They were tired of Steinbrenner just buying what he needed, and so they started implementing rules. As it was, Jim Brown talked about what a great book he's got, too, Out of Bounds. You got to read that book. He talked about how they wise and lame.
Great book. I read that book.
Doc Chamberlain.
It's awesome.
You know?
It's awesome.
Yeah, great book. And you know, Jim Brown, he talked about breathtaking running, Bobby Mitchell and Gale Sayers. He said, you know, he said nobody ran prettier than Gale Sayers. I remember when I talked to Gale Sayers, and I never forget, it was at Tyson Nyholm's boxing press conference, and the daughter Jiminy, she was there with me. And I asked Gale Sayers, who's the best running back? And he answered the question, I know I'm being as if I asked him his social security number. He said, Jim Brown. And they're looking like, you know, it's obvious. I said, well, why? He said, well, first of all, he was the best. Second of all, he said he ran in an era when the defense was designed to stop the pass first, the rush first, and the pass second. In today's game, it's opposite. The defense is designed to stop the pass first and the rush second. And if you know about Jim Brown won the rushing title 8 out of 9 years. won the rushing title his first year in the league, and he went out to the league with the MVP in the rushing title. Doc Stanley, Sports Net Blog Talk Radio on the Trusted Guard Network. We're talking a host of things. Anybody got something you want to shout out, jumping in real quickly. We got Rooney back, so we're kind of ecstatic to have him. We're letting him lead some things. Lady A, it announced Sergio Martinez against Miguel Cotto.
June MSG.
June 7th, that's going to be at the Garden. And I was talking to Gilberto Ortiz. Maybe get Gilberto a little interview. And Gilberto was talking about a couple of things that been Lady A said, Doc, it ain't happening. One was that the possibility of Mayweather not fighting Khan, but fighting
Marco Maidana.
With Khan and Rona as on the deep card. And then June said, well, you know, Cotto really wanted, he turned down more money.
Yep.
He turned down more money. Less. He took less money to fight Martinez as opposed to fighting
than
Alvarez.
To fight Canelo. No,
he was,
to
he,
fight
you know
Canelo.
What I said, Dusty? And I told Lady A and I told June, that's nonsense. That fight wasn't going to happen because Golden
Bob
Boy,
in top rank
is going to happen.
That's right.
So, I mean, so, you know, for Miguel to say that, you know, Miguel's jerking us. You know what
look,
I mean? Because
look,
there's no
look,
way in the
look,
world.
Look, the bottom line, Doc, if you're going to get into boxing, the bottom line is that Miguel Cotto was making money as a free agent. He lost his testicles and went back home to mom, Aaron. No, that's the truth. He went back home to mom, so now mom is going to dictate what he's going to get. The man was going to get pay-per-view Canelo Alvarez over $10 million.
Wow.
And he's not going to get a dime close to that with Martinez. The only faction is that Bob Arum doesn't want anything to do with Golden Boy. He's very friendly with Lou DiBella, who has Martinez. They work
right.
together, okay?
Right.
And because Bob Arum owned Kelly Pavlik, and DiBella owned Jermaine Taylor, and what happens? Jermaine Taylor got murdered. Now, the
yeah.
thing is that what he does now, he'll work with Lou DiBella, and maybe Miguel Cotto will get a nickel, but he's fighting for a title that he wants, and that's not going to happen. Now, the only possible thing, let me finish this thing, the only possible advantage with Miguel Cotto that he's been fighting, he fought Delvin Rodriguez, which was no challenge, but he's been fighting. Martinez is coming out of almost over a year of three surgeries. He's rusty. He looked like crap when he fought Murray. Murray knocked him down twice. So maybe that might be the advantage that Miguel Cotto has. But I don't know. I don't know. But the fact of the matter is that it was stupid of Miguel Cotto to turn down Canelo Alvarez, who is still shell-shocked from the slapping around he got from Mayweather, that he may not be mentally prepared to face a banger. So he's taking Angulo. You think Angulo is going to be easy? Angulo hits like a freaking rock. So the fact of the matter is that Miguel Cotto is stupid. He wants to do the Puerto Rican Day Parade. And by the way, the Puerto Rican Day Parade committee probably all went to jail because they're stealing the money. So
wow.
They may not have a parade Sunday for Miguel Cotto to...
Wow.
Miguel Cotto to celebrate his defeat, and the fact of the matter is that he wants to go back and build up the tradition of
hey,
the Puerto Rican Day Parade.
That part about the Puerto Rican committee was that in the notes that Lee Samuels gave you? You edited that.
Man, these freaking guys are stealing money head over heels, man. Over $1 million of the money that goes to organize a parade. The inspector general got into it and fired everybody on top, and this guy's facing jail time and return of the monies. Now the supporters are saying, "Hey, do we have a Puerto Rican Day parade, or do we march them down Fifth Avenue in orange jumpsuits?" I don't know, but the fact is that they're going ahead. Cotto's going to fight the 7th, and hopefully the parade will be on the 8th. I don't know who. Rikers out in inmates. I don't know. But
Without further ado, we bring to you the legendary, the one and only. Put your hands together for her, baby. Lady A, have your say, girl. It's your time. Come on, Lady A.
Can you guys hear me?
Hey.
Yeah, because I'm trying to get, I wasn't sure if you could hear me. I'm in my car, and I don't have too long to stay on. I just was trying to kind of piggyback on what Dusty was saying. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah. I hit an alarm, so go ahead.
Okay, no. A couple of things with that, just a couple of points I wanted to inject. Number one was that, number one is hello to Rooney, and I'm glad that he's back.
Thanks, A. Miss you all.
Miss you guys. Number two, when you look at Cotto, or comparatively speaking, when you look at Cotto's performance, Dusty had mentioned throughout like the last few fights that he kind of had died out, and then his last fight with Delvin Rodriguez, you saw a little bit of a change under the tutelage and the training of
Freddie Roach. Right.
Now, you know, a couple of things I think that we consistently talk about is to deal with the promoters. In the last press conference that Dusty and I went to, I was able to speak to Joel Diaz, which is Timothy Bradley's trainer. And one of the things he said was, and we've talked about on the show, was, you know, the differences and, you know, the disputes and whatnot going back and forth between Golden Boy and Top Rank. My thing is everybody knows the money fights are under Mayweather. And one of the things that I mentioned to Doc when we talked in the past is the fact that Mayweather wants to get crowned this great. But in order to be great, you have to do what the greats have done. If he sees that his competition, the only guy that actually made him bleed was Cotto. Before him, the last guy before him was Jose Luis Castillo in his fight 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Am I correct? That does
you're
about
right. 10 years
okay,
ago.
So now you have him at 147. He's fighting at 147, Mayweather. Cotto has moved up. With this fight against Martinez, he's fighting him at he's going up in weight. Okay.
Yeah.
And if I'm not mistaken,
yep.
they're also fighting at a catch weight. So, you know, we're looking at two different spectrums. And my thing is that, you know, the money fights are, yes, for Mayweather, and those fights are there. But Mayweather still is not fighting the guy that's fighting. You know?
No, he's not.
Hands down, you got Alvarez fighting Angulo in a couple of weeks. And I was still telling Dusty before, why is he fighting Angulo when Lara beat Trout? And he beat Angulo. I mean, not only did he beat Angulo, but he messed up his eye. His eyes, he was looking like a frog.
Exactly. But you see, Lady A, the thing is that it's the money angle and the power of the promoters. You see, when you turn around, and you're Golden Boy, Lady A, and you offer me $10 million plus pay-per-view to fight Canelo, man, hey, I'm here. Let's sign on the dotted line. I'm ready to go. But you have the intervention of this pissing contest between promoters who hate each other, and no matter how much money you're going to generate, no matter how much pay-per-view you're going to generate, you hate each other. They'd rather take chump change. You see, and that's the problem.
Here's the flip side. Like, how much of that do you really blame the general public, too? Because
no, the public has nothing to do with it.
Right, no, I'm just saying, how much do you blame general public, too? Because it's like, if you're going to consistently play, hey, these people are making money. They're making money because the fans are paying, and they're accepting these fights. You know, like, check this out. Like, you can't say there haven't been a couple of cards this past, like, year, I would say, that haven't been packed cards. Like, the last fight that Mayweather had, you had three or four card fights on that card that were great. People wouldn't mind paying that. But if the fans are paying, they're going to keep putting out these BS fights. You understand what I'm saying?
But that's the point. The point is, to build up the Mayweather Canelo, they put in Danny Garcia and Matisse. And you know, they'll go around talking about the fact that we made a lot of money. But that's not true. They didn't make a lot of money. They didn't sell out like Mayweather and De La Hoya. They didn't get that many pay-per-view buys. The reason they made a lot of money is because suckers like me, instead of the $49.95, paid $75 to see that fight.
But you just validated my point.
Exactly.
I mean, a lot of it is our fault too, because we're paying for these fights.
We're paying for this garbage.
Nobody's making the fans pay, and
exactly.
for the boxing fan though, what chance do you have? Where else are you going to go?
Exactly.
It's a catch-22. You can say, I can't see the fight. Hold on. A person like you, Rooney, us, the experts, we have to see the fight.
Absolutely. We have to see it.
We have to see the fight.
I think the fans have to step up to some degree.
They will not.
But you know what they have done, Lady A? What the fans have done, Dusty doesn't watch the fight anymore, Boss. He said, hey, Mel, you and Rooney come by the house, and we go half with Dusty on the fight. Or you... And Hoopster and Wings, a lot of fans are doing, they're buying the fight, and that's why the numbers are going down, because
exactly.
they're not getting the multiple of
they're
single
pooling
days.
Their money.
So now me, Dusty, and Rooney get together on the fight, and you, Wings, and Hoopster get together on the fight, and Jumpside Jonesy, so now you got 9 people on 3 fights, where at one time you had 9 single fights.
Exactly.
Right, and everybody was buying it, right?
Yeah. See. Well, so now you don't have 9 buys. You got 3 buys.
I guess what I'm trying to say is, you know, as long as they have a market, you know, they're gonna be able to do what they do, and you know, and it's enough already. You know, it's gotten to the point with 10. What are we gonna see? A freaking Pacquiao Marquez 10? I mean,
they're gonna buy it.
Let me interject something else too. I don't know if you folks are aware of the fact that a Boxino program or tournament has been initiated last week in ESPN Friday night.
Saw some of the fights, yeah.
Where they're going to have a tournament of, I believe, in the lightweight of 8 guys competing each other so that the last man standing is the champion. This is
coming up, guys.
Right. So what's happening is they see boxing, the promoters are like a corporate board. They sit and say, whoa, we didn't make this much. Well, we lost this. Let's do something. Create a like the Super Sixes to whet the appetite of people. Now this is something that the architect number one of all of this tournaments was Don King with the battleship fights. And Don King, when he had the program or the contest between Tito Trinidad and Hopkins, beating up all those middleweights to create one middleweight, but he gave it to Tito, but Hopkins turned the table. So what happens now, that they see that the audience is falling down, they come up with this Boxino, and they're going to run this thing through perhaps the entire year. So what happens is that we still are going to see. I'm fascinated to see. I'm curious to see how Canelo Alvarez is minus after getting slapped for 12 rounds against Mayweather. How Angulo is going to come up to snuff after he suffered that injury in his right eye, his left eye, after he almost killed Arislandi Lara because he dropped him like a lead balloon twice. But he suffered an injury. Now I'm fascinated to see
if Lawrence changed his name to American Dream. Got you right now. If they would fight again, he doesn't get hurt, who wins the rematch?
Angulo wins the rematch. Angulo almost dropped him dead twice.
Lady, you agree?
You know why? But you know what? You're right. But at the late, right before that round where he hit him with that shot on his eye, he was coming back. I think, to be honest with you, I would love to see a rematch again on that fight.
Angulo would knock him out because he knocked him down.
Not for nothing, he's the one guy beat Trout. Canelo did not beat Trout. I'm sorry, to this day.
Of course not. He did not. No.
Okay. That was a draw. And, you know, not for nothing, but they gave it to him, but he did not beat Trout.
No,
okay?
He did not.
I would love to see Angulo and Lara again. I think that would be a great fight again.
Yeah. Because Angulo will beat him. He knocked him down for 2-9 counts, man.
But you know, again, we know we're talking about the 154 division, and I'm going to tell you right now, Mayweather is not going up to fight these guys at 154.
No, he's staying with his...
You know what? There's two things here. He doesn't have to. He doesn't have to because he's the money guy. So what everybody does, the point that you made, Lady A, is true. I mean, he's not doing what Tommy and Ray and Harold and the guys, yes, he did. I'm going to fight you at 154. But people are saying, okay, you know what? He's the Harold.
Listen, just the fact that Dusty told me that he was going to fight Amir Khan. Come on, I'm telling you. You're going to fight Amir Khan? Come on, Dusty. Dusty, Amir Khan.
That was the dead body he took out of the supermarket, man.
Here's the whole story with this. And Rudy, you can dovetail me. You know, Showtime is now looking back and saying, wait a minute, hold me. No, we gave this guy too many fights. They gave Mayweather too many fights.
Six fights for $200 million, but you see, Doc, you have to understand that Mayweather is picking his tomato cans. Now he had the audience select who he should fight next. And what happens? He had Khan hanging on the rafters, but the audience said Khan. But now he's talking about fighting Maidana. You know, to fulfill his stupid contract for $200 million, you know, he has the nerve to tell Pacquiao, "You're not at my level. You're not at my level." But he's fighting Deadwood. So what are you talking about?
Him and Khan, man.
Hold tight, gang. I got to do attendance here. Hold on. Let me do attendance real quickly. Harold, you still with us?
Yeah.
Okay, Harold's here. All right, I got Lady A.
How you doing, Harold?
Hey, all right.
Dusty, yep. Jumpshot Jonesy, Rooney's here. Did GW Mike get with us? Okay, nope. I'm waiting for another call. I got another call. Okay, everybody sound off. Who did I miss? I got a 551 here.
C-Wings? C-Wings is here.
Okay, Wings is finally here. Okay, and I got who's this 551 I got?
What's your number 551? 265?
Yeah.
This is Frank Kuhn. How you doing?
Hey, Frankie. How you doing, baby?
How you doing?
Okay, you want
classmate of Greg Jones Sr.
Yeah, I heard you there. Listen, I mean, hey, you can say a little something, too. Hey, listen, we'll give you a discount price for 10 minutes. Go ahead. What you got to say, baby?
Listen, let me just say this about Mayweather, okay? They can hate him if he wants to. But when he fought Canelo Alvarez outweighed him. Canelo came in at 165 pounds. He came in at 165. And Mayweather outboxed him. He didn't slap him, as my man said. He hit that guy, and he outmaneuvered him, outboxed
him. Yes.
Actually, Mayweather initiated the action, and that's what was a surprise to me and so many other boxing fans, that he came straight at
Canelo.
He came straight to him. He didn't run around. He came to him. He got that respect, and like one of the announcers, Paulie Malignaggi, and a couple of guys said, yeah, what he's trying to do is he's trying to show him, yes, young boy, you're in here with a real champ. Yes, you've been knocking guys out, and you beat Sugar Shane Mosley and all of that, but know your place. And to do that is not very easy, you know what I mean? And remember, Mayweather is 36 years old.
Nobody's
taking anything away from Mayweather. What I'm trying to make you understand is he's going from a select few instead of fighting tougher competition. But he took this guy who was supposed to be the Mexican world beater who will destroy Floyd Mayweather, and Floyd Mayweather took him downtown, the deep waters, and slapped the crap out of him. That's my expression.
A peanut gallery. I mean, exactly. Think about that fight.
Crap out of him. This, I mean, Mayweather is a master at what he does. And no matter who it is, No matter who he is, who he fights, he's going to beat. Canelo could have come in 190 pounds. He was still going to get murdered.
Well, that's because he fought a stupid fight plan, Dust. Now, I know you know your boxing sort of
Rudy,
the entire
Rudy,
crew.
Rudy, what fight plan?
Rudy,
what fight plan? I mean, you know, that was the amazing thing about that, Rudy.
He had no fight plan.
And that's what Harold talks about.
You know what? The point you both make was after round two, Canelo was washed up. He was washed up, Mosley. Okay, and he didn't even beat Trout. So what are we talking about? Alvarez is still a developmental fighter.
Hold on. Alvarez was there because Alvarez was the money fight. Alvarez,
exactly.
After the second round, Alvarez was like, oh, this is Floyd Mayweather? I mean,
exactly.
Absolutely.
Now, Harold, I want you to tell me. And you heard Dusty and the panel talking about this lack of interest in the game, and they're talking about where does this blame go, Harold? Now you're a guy. Understand? We're talking to as Black History Month. This is a man who made African American history, the first and only African American matchmaker in the history of the greatest boxing arena, or the greatest arena of sports ever. The guy who was also a welterweight champion, won Elite Fighter of Virginia, a Golden Glover. Harold, whose fault is this? And you know, you've been saying this for the long. They're talking about the decline of sales. They're talking about the lack of interest. Now, how much of this is a promoter? Like Dusty's saying, now, here's a fight that can be made. Here's a fight that's a mega fight. Pacquiao, Mayweather, with Alvarez, Cotto. How much of this is the promoter's fault? And how much of this is the fans being fooled to still come, Harold?
Well, let me get some things straight. First thing, Mayweather signed for a $300 million deal for six fights for Showtime. Let's get that out the way. It wasn't the fight with these guys putting these little tournaments together, every tournament that they had put on TV has failed and lost money. Don King tournament with ABC failed, and that's the reason why they closed that down real quick. This one that they had with 168-pound champion on, I think it was Showtime or HBO, I forget what
Super Sixes,
was.
Yeah.
That failed, okay? So anytime they put these stupid tournaments on and try to get this one fighter to be champion out of the weight class, fails, okay? People are not interested in it. The problem that you're having with the boxing world, you have these dumb, okey-doke promoters who think they know the sport because they sat at ringside for a couple of fights and a few guys was in the, you know, corporate world of HBO, Showtime. And they all think they know fighters. They don't know fighters. What has happened, I'm gonna give the old saying like Don King. Everybody that's there is on the plantation. And when you got people on plantation, they got to do what the masters say to do. Now, the reason why boxing was so great before is because Madison Square Garden was an open door. And you had a free society where people could come in and fight each other and there was competition. But you don't have that now. You got people walking around and they want to be masters. Okay? Yes. My point is that when you have that, you have too much control. You can't make boxing like baseball and like football and basketball. You don't have a team situation. It's a sport that has started from day one. From the reason why it was so great for years and years, it was number one at one time, is because the doors was open for everybody to come in who thought they can fight. Okay? But you don't have it no more. And that's where you're down for. And you're giving the public and you're screwing the public with these mismatches. And I'm going to say fights that are pretty much are booked already. You know who's going to be a winner. And that's the downfall of the sport.
Amir Khan, Harold. Really?
That's because the promoters are pushing for this. Come on.
Hey, what you want me to say? Oh, it's one of the greatest fights ever. It's matches with Joe Frazier and Muhammad Ali. Are you crazy? Oh, this is a great fight. Oh, this is one of the greatest fights we're ever going to see. You want me to say that?
He's a bum.
You forget one thing that
the promoters have begun to take more power and more control of the state commissions throughout the states. The promoters are over. They pick the judges. They pick the referees. They do this. And then there is a legality here where a promoter is not a manager. But underneath the table, he is managing the fighters. The official manager is only but a puppet being told what to do, who to do, where to go by the promoter. Promoter is the controller. This is why they come up with this.
Can I make a quick point? This point is to Al and the rest of the crew, but especially you, Al. Al, what you say is absolutely on point, because you have now you have MMA women's pay-per-views like yesterday's Ronda Rousey and Sarah McMahon outdrawing the guys. Ronda Rousey won that Rumble, impressively.
Exactly.
First round.
58 seconds, something like that.
A knee to the liver ended that in the first round, very, very early. Vicious knee to the liver.
For the
arm
bar
on
her, that was it. That was a wrap.
Back up, gang. Let's take a quick second here. Dusty, you know, the point you made up, and me and Lady A were talking to Melvina Layton one time, and she said, and Dusty, you know, now that you're back to, understand, we cannot continue to keep agreeing like we always do, else there will be problems again like there was the last time, okay? So just get that straight.
I'll see you in divorce court. Go ahead, man.
Make sure you get half.
Hey, that's good. Judge Lynn, you better be cool.
Can I make a point?
Shot, Jonesy?
Yeah, I think what Mr. Weston was saying was he was right on the money.
Hey, Jonesy, it's all right if you call him Harold, as long as you say Mr. Harold. I got to be Mr. Weston, Mr. Harold, that's all.
Well, much respect to him. Much respect to him. And in addition to what he laid it out pretty succinctly. What I would add to what he said was one of the things with boxing in its heyday, it had a very vibrant heavyweight class.
These promoters today, there's
really nothing to promote because you don't have that. During the heyday of boxing, and Mr. Weston can back me up on this, I guess.
You just had the heavyweight
division in addition to the personalities that you had really sustained boxing for a long time, and you don't have that today.
If you're dependent on the heavyweights, well, then we have nothing. We don't need the heavyweights.
Exactly.
We have enough weight divisions to attract a multitude of fight fans. Leave the heavyweights over there, and we are saturated with different level weights. What I said before, and I stand by it, is a controlling factor of the promoters and fighting each other, cutting each other's throat. The other day, there was two major fights of two different sanctioning promoters. One was at the Barclays. The other one at the same time, same day, was Boardwalk Hall. My God, are you crazy? That's stupid. Why can the commissioner say, hey, you cannot have these two major fights on the same day? It doesn't happen because the promoters control the situation. And when you see a $10 million pot plus a pay-per-view, and the promoter says, no, you're going to make that much money than what I'm going to give you, but you're not going to fight this dude. You're going to fight who I tell you to fight. That's ridiculous.
Do you think when it comes to Mayweather, do you think that they're more worried about just fulfilling the contract that he has with the number of fights, rather than just with quality?
Right, exactly, because he has to fulfill an undefeated $200 million contract with six fights. This is what is so ridiculous.
$300 million.
No, $200 million. 200.
300. No.
What, did they raise it to 300? I said maybe because he told us at the press conference that it was 200. Now they changed it to 300. That's a different story.
He's making on the average fight, he's making $40 to $50 million.
Exactly. His last fight with Canelo was $41,900, not counting the pay-per-view.
Oh, my God. He's going to fight Amir Khan. Please. I mean,
I agree with you, lady.
In the rest of the public.
But
exactly.
You're fighting.
That would never happen.
You're fighting a losing battle, Lady A, because they're going to do what they want to do. And Mayweather is going to remain undefeated. That's
but
the program.
On that ballot, what hasn't been said, is on that ballot they only had a choice between Amir Khan and Marcos Maidana. What happened to all the other people? What happened
because
to all the
Mayweather
other
dictates. Don't you understand,
okay.
Lady A?
Yeah,
you're fighting a losing battle. Don't you understand that Mayweather dictates what's going to do? What he's going to do? Mayweather is the man who's dictating what he's going to do.
What Dusty is basically saying is, what other people? Gang, don't move. We'll be back in a minute. Rudy's back, and we're glad to see him. Ken, real quickly, Howard Weston, understand this, Ken. This ain't the Howard Weston show, but go ahead and say hello real quick, buddy. Go ahead.
Yeah, hello, Howard?
Yes.
Yeah, how you doing? This is Ken Washington, son of George Washington, best high boxing. And,
how you feeling?
Oh, I'm good. I just wanted to say hello to you. I remember back in the day when you was managing Hot Pepper Brent.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but one thing I was listening to, because I was invited by Brother Greg Jones and
Ken and Jones are members of the legendary Bridge Street Church, pastored by one of the fine pastors. And in fact, George Washington, Ken's, as he speaks the name, he was a legendary trainer
I once got some instruction from George. Great trainer. The guru for Mark Breland later on, Rick Bowe.
Rudy, yeah. Not only Mark Breland, but for Big Daddy, Big Daddy Bowe.
The litany was Eddie Mustafa Muhammad, Mark Breland, Riddick Bowe,
right.
Michael Peck, Henry
right.
Brett. Basically he had some fighters that people don't even remember no more. Bobby Mashburn.
Yeah, you named world champions. Brent, Big Daddy Poe, Mark Whelan, Eddie Mustafa, Muhammad, Harold Weston said it. Eddie Mustafa was a monster when it came to. You just named five, we're not talking about just champions on paper, five elite champions at a time where boxers knew how to fight and they were some of the best fighters around. They're all from Brooklyn.
That's right.
All Brooklyn.
Right.
Big
yes,
Eddie
sir.
Poe.
Yes, sir.
You know, you're talking about Eddie Mustafa, who was at one time Eddie the Flame Gregory. Am I right, Harold?
Yes.
Eddie the Flame Gregory.
Yes, that's
Eddie Gregory. Yep.
Yeah. 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 Matter of fact,
Gregory.
He's the one that fought James Scott over in Rawley State Prison.
I'm gonna ask you, Harold, because you remember the Sphinx against Eddie Mustafa fight? They had the win. A lot of people think there was a little robbery there because it was Eddie Mustafa Muhammad, who Michael Sphinx got the light heavyweight championship from. That fight, Harold, there was some speculation. Did you feel some hanky-panky in that fight, Harold?
Oh, yeah, they rigged the scale. They rigged the scale. They made Michael come down and wait, lay down and wait, and they knew Eddie was going to be a little too heavy. They rigged the scale.
They wanted to dehydrate Greg when he wouldn't win that fight. That's what happened.
Right.
You know,
gentlemen, that's not what they wanted to do. That's what they did do,
and he
lost the title. That's exactly what happened, because they were saying one time Eddie was on the scale, he weighed one weight. When he came back on the scale, he weighed a different weight. So how did that happen?
Eddie came in the right way. He weighed 175. He's right on weight. And I knew they were gonna rig the scale, and they had Michael get down to like 171. So it was like about 1 to 2 pounds over the situation. Michael came in like 172, 173, something like that. And Eddie came in like 177. You know, he was over the weight. So they made him, you know, they sparked that he had to lose the weight.
Yeah, you know, if he had went in that steam room and jump rope like they wanted him to, he would have been so weak that he never would have beat Mike.
Right.
He would never last
any rounds at all, you know.
And that's what they asked him to do. They asked him to go in the steam room.
So, give me a minute. Once again, this is why you're hearing stuff you don't hear anyplace else. So, sports in depth. You know, it's not only we want to give you an in-depth look, also the performers and the athletes that performed them. And with this panel of mine, with the intellect, sports in depth is not only sports in depth, but it's the world in depth. And every time you come here, I mean, from the lips of anybody and everybody in this panel, you're learning something. Sports in depth gives you an education unlike any other station. And once again, it's Dr. Stanley, Sports in Depth, Blog Talk Radio on the Texas Guardian Network. We'll be right back in just a minute. Dr. Stanley, Sports in Depth, Blog Talk Radio. Rooney, it's so good to have you back home where you belong.
Thank you, good doctor.
Welcome back.
One more time, gang.
That's funny. I see something.
Dr. Stanley, Sports Net, Blog Talk Radio, on the Social Government Network. We got Cincinnati Sea Wings here. Wings, we're keeping you on the hold here. You're back from Puerto Rico. Some things have been happening. Jason Collins, our first openly gay player. Maybe we're getting with the Nets. So we told you about our Olympic game.
Yeah, it's a done deal. 10-day contract.
10-day contract? Mm-hmm. Okay. We told
and
you
also,
about
and our good friend, Ron Artest, Miller of World Peace, they're going to let him go. They're going to buy him out his contract.
What?
So that's kind of shame. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you know, if Meta would do more than just run up and down the court, you know, half the time these guys look like they're only showing up to get paid and not win ball games. I mean, like I said to Doc before, we went to break. Everybody on that squad, with the exception of Carmelo, has seemed to regress. The center, the guard. You name them, they don't look the same. No, nobody on that squad looks the same except Carmelo.
Yeah. No,
I mean, they don't have the leadership that they had. I mean, you had Jason Kidd. You had a lot of seasoned veterans on the Knicks last year that were able to, you know, not only mentor these guys. You know, you had Jason Kidd controlling the movement of the ball.
Yeah.
You know, and
by example.
And yeah, and he's a guy coming with the ring as well. I mean, he's been there. He was from the metropolitan area, having played many seasons with the at that time the New Jersey Nets.
What happened to him that was supposed to be this great defensive stopper? What happened to the other guard who disappears and gets destroyed by point guards day in and day out? What happened to the center who goaltender with balls hitting his head and bouncing back out? I mean, all these guys look like a Flintstone commercial or something.
Not only are they a cartoon, but they're in a cartoon division. Let's talk about pro football real quick, gang. Okay, Wings, what's happening? I heard some talk, and Rooney, calm down. Okay, just sit down. Don't let your heart go jumping over again after this. But I heard, in fact, Lady A's heart started jumping too. But I heard they said Mark Sanchez had a little bit throwing the ball the other day there, Wings. What's the story here, baby?
Well, they said that definitely he's back to, you know, arm strength and everything after undergoing his surgery on his throwing shoulder. As we know, he was injured.
No one cares about that guy.
He was injured in the preseason. You know, I don't know why Rex put him in there. He was injured in the second half against the New York Giants. But I don't think that Mark Sanchez will be back here or Santonio Holmes because they will count for about $35 million in cap space. Mark Sanchez is due to receive $2 million in a roster bonus in late March. It's expected that he's going to be released, and that the Jets, there are a lot of media reports going around the league that the Jets are looking at the Bears' backup quarterback, Josh McCown, who has 38 career starts for a total of 5 teams. As we know, he was drafted in 2002 by the Arizona Cardinals. But he had a 109 passer rating. He went 3-2 when he filled in when Jay Cutler was hurt. He got the groin injury. But I would like to see the Jets go after Michael Vick, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Why not?
I just think, well, they're looking at, they would like Josh McCown. They believe the Jets, these are reports going around the league, that he would be a better mentor and a backup quarterback or someone that they can put in there if Geno Smith doesn't work out. Which I think
let me go here right now, Black History Month. You know, okay, how much of him being an African American have a role in this? Because as we look back, you know, Geno's the first black starting quarterback ever in this town.
Ever.
And Jeff Blake some years ago, they wouldn't play him. So I'm wondering.
And Ray Lucas.
You know,
Ray Lucas.
There you go. Okay, go. Help me out, gang. So my question here would have to be asked.
But he's the actual first black starting quarterback, not.
That's what I'm saying. But we're talking about the black quarterbacks don't seem to last longer in New York City. And the question is, how much of Vic not being looked at has to do with efficacy? I mean, Vic was number one quarterback of football at one time. He still seems to be viable. I mean, just give it to me. I mean, how much of this?
I mean,
it's just amazing that these things come up. When you talk about athletes of color, all of a sudden, well, we don't know. Mario Soriano, I remember Alfonso Soriano, when he became the least second baseman of the Yankees, I was on the field one day, sitting next to the great Reggie Jackson. Reggie said, you know, last year they were talking about his mentality. He didn't have it. The same thing with Cano. I mean, who was wrong? Who the hell is this guy to come off dogging about Cano? He's dogging it. I hear that. What the guy? Maybe 247? Or did he ever play pro ball? But where the hell did he come off dogging Cano? I mean, you don't do that from a guy they had a close relationship? Wait, what kind of relationship did they have? He dogged the guy? I mean, who is this guy? I mean, where did he come off with this kind of stuff dogging? Come on, Dusty. Come on, baby. Get militant, Dusty. Get militant.
These suckers feel they have the freedom to dog a person when the dog beats him or the dog bit him. And that's what it is. Cano was not going to get, if I'm on the right track, was not going to get what I felt he deserved and what he wanted. Seattle says, okay, you got to come here if you want what you want. And we'll take you. Now Cano is a dog because he grew a beard, because he didn't hustle to first base. Hey, Jose Reyes did that, and Willie Randolph slapped the shit out of him. So nobody told Cano anything about not hustling to first base. But now that he's in Seattle, oh well, he's not a hustler. You guys inherited a loafer. I mean, they feel that they have to justify losing a key Gold Glove player. They're going to do that. They're going to do that. If you cannot even venture, even though you're suspicious of the raciality of it. Would they have done that to Craig Nettles if he had gone to Seattle, or to Mark Teixeira if he had gone to Seattle? I don't know. But the fact of the matter is,
Dusty, let me answer the question for you, Dusty. Here's the answer. No. Okay? You don't know now? Here's the answer. Let me tell you. No, they wouldn't have did it. Now you know the answer. Go ahead, Dusty.
Let me answer this question about Roger Vick. But the fact of the matter is that the man, that they had to get even with Cano and knock him down.
Let me answer this.
You guys are forgetting something really big, too.
What is
that really?
You're forgetting something big, too. How many years didn't they say, oh, Mark Sanchez, no, he's a star. Oh, no, he just has to get used to it. He's still a rookie. Oh, no, give him another year till he gets better. 5 years later, hello.
Yeah.
Five years later, they did nothing to help him.
I could just see the reaction of Lady A when he threw the interception or the mini interceptions, and she would – it would be like on the seat.
You know,
she would just jump up.
You know,
I can't believe it.
And
you only get thrown at the game?
It was also a game. But wait.
But listen,
question,
one thing the Jets need to do, I don't care if you put Joe Montana back.
Hold on, wait. Everybody say hello to Rosie. Our number one listener from We'll go to Rubazoo. She's on the air. Everybody say hi to Rosie.
Hey,
hi,
Rosie.
Rosie.
Hi, Miss Rosie. Good evening, Miss Rosie.
Me and Doc are coming back down there.
Yeah, right wing.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter who they put in the center to run the offense. You have to have a good receiving core.
Yeah.
And what they have, you could put the young Joe Montana there. You could
exactly.
I mean, you could put many of these quarterbacks. If you have no one to throw to, it doesn't matter. You could put Tom Brady there. You could put Randall Cunningham.
You could have Brady, Marino, Johnny U, Joe Namath. Nobody could do anything with that knock of offensive talent.
Exactly.
Okay, so what's the story then? Why is Holmes going? He's too hurt. He's not producing. What's the story? I mean, you're saying he doesn't have a quarterback to throw the ball to him, so why is he being told sayonara?
I mean, I just think
they want a clean house.
You know, the injuries he's had, the lack of catching, making, you know, he would say, you know, throw the ball to me. And you look last year when he did come back and he threw the ball, a lot of times he dropped it. He was like Stephen Hill.
Exactly.
I mean, he counts a lot just as Mark Sanchez does towards the cap. The cap is projected to be $130 million, $132 million this year, the salary cap. If they can clear these two guys, which I think they will have about $35 million in cap space, releasing Holmes and Sanchez.
Could you back up and explain to the fans listening? Doc Stanley, Sports Net, Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Radio Network. Rooney is back, and that's our theme today. Rooney returns. Can you explain to the fans listening what you mean by the cap? And we explained, as they were saying, Jump Shot Jonesy, people said, well, why can't the Knicks go out and buy certain players? And Jonesy and Hoops said, hey, they've got a cap. The financial thing they can't do. Can you explain to us remotely quickly about the cap and how it hinders and also validates what Jerry Reese said? Please.
Well, basically the salary cap is a hard cap that which is negotiated between the league and the Players Association. They have to spend in the National Football League roughly about 88% to 89% of the salaries for player compensation and about 90% for future compensation. It's really utilized to prevent the teams from that are in good financial status from pulling all the good players. You won't see those dominant teams like you have in the 80s and stuff with the 49ers and different things like that. It gives more leverage to bring, more leverage to other, so you don't have these dominant teams winning
quality
over and over and over.
More leverage and more balance.
Back in the early, what was it, 30s and 40s, the Cleveland Browns were able to just keep reaping the, the top talent. They were winning time and time again. So that's basically what the salary cap is to have more parity throughout the league.
To make the odds a little bit more even and keep the major market teams from gobbling up all the good players and spending all the money, a.k.a. the Yankees back in their heyday.
Right. And it gives the team the ability to bring in more, the younger players and stuff like that, rather than, as you've seen back in the early 90s, late 80s, how they would keep a veteran player and, bring in other talent. But the veteran players had to make more than the rookie players. So when you have these veteran players that contribute to the teams over the years, they seem to decline in production. So this gives the teams also leverage in, releasing a lot of the veteran players who – although they contributed to the success of the team, they're also declining in production.
It's the league's way of trying to police out of control spending from larger markets. That's what they're trying to do.
Don't forget the tax too.
Right.
That's the same reason you had Carmelo saying that I'd be willing to take less if you're going to spend some of that money to get me some help. Because it's going to cost him because if he wants to go to a contender and have a chance of still winning a championship before his window of opportunity closes, he wants to go to a team where he doesn't have to do it all and still have no chance, then it's going to cost him roughly $32 million, which is the Knicks can pay him roughly $32 million more than any other team in the league.
Well,
because
he's not
going to
stay, Rooney,
if you will.
Rooney, he's not staying. Not with that team. He's not. He's going to leave.
You know,
he's
you
not
know,
staying.
They don't have the. They don't have the money to spend on a talent. The problem with the Knicks is they seem to sign players, these so-called superstar players, at the point when they sign them are superstars only in name. At that point, they have
tremendous tremendous point. They get a guy who's past his prime. He's still got the name. And what happens? The tennis does well the first year or so, or maybe two, because people want to come out and say, "I saw that guy play." But then when there's no winning, hey, you know, you're right. Tremendous point. Doc Stanley, Sports Net Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Radio Network. Rooney returns. Melco Selsmith Jr., a.k.a. Little Coco, a.k.a. Rooney. He's back, and we're just so happy letting him know how much we miss him. And two of the big things I talked about today was I just can't get over those Queen Latifah, what a talent she is, and what a great personality. And she had two white kids on her show, and they were Sherman fans. And they just talked about how much they appreciate it. And the thing that really touched me is the last thing the little fella said, "Why do you like him so much?" He said, "Well, he's my favorite Seattle Seahawks player. He's a great football player, and I love him." And they were just so stunned when he came out and gave him footballs and stuff. But it just shows, once again, that, you know, racism is something that you're not born with. You're introduced to it, it's indoctrinated, and you're taught it. And, you know, the last thing the little boy said was, you know, "And I love him." And he was so stunned when he saw him. He just couldn't believe him, you know. He couldn't believe he was there. And it's, you know, Willie Mays once said, I believe, said that, you know, if kids ran the world, it'd be a whole different world. He talked about it as a kid in Alabama. And when I talk about Willie Mays, he's talking about the greatest baseball player that ever lived. And we'll talk about his godson in just a minute. And Willie talked about how him and his wife, and, you know, Willie played shortstop, the white kids said, the police would come and segregate them. And they said they wait till the police go, and they go right back to playing the way they were. And it just shows you kids are not hung up in color. You know, they judge by the heart. We want to say Barry Lamar Bonds, the greatest player of his generation, the only man to win MVP 7 times in a row, the oldest man ever to win a batting championship, the all-time home run king, 762. You people like digits, you can run that tomorrow. The man with the most home runs in one season by a left-handed batter, the man with the most home runs in one season by anybody, the only man in history of baseball to hit over 500 home runs and steal over 500 bases. The Giants are bringing Barry back. He's going to be a special instructor in spring training with the Giants. And they just said
good
something.
For him. Well-deserved. Yeah. About time.
Oh, yeah. Well, when McGuire came back, and
right.
Barry Lamar Bonds. I remember I read an article where Joe Morgan said he never saw anybody the kind of respect that Barry Bonds had. Barry Bonds walked over 200 times one year. And when Barry Bonds walked 76 times intentionally, that was more times than Willie Mays had been walked the last 10 years of his career. It was more times than Hank Aaron had been walked the last 6 times, the last 6 years of his career. Okay, he shattered the record.
That was the year when I saw Bonds walk. Now, get this, with the bases loaded, get 2 intentional walks at least that year. I'm like, man, the bases are loaded, and they won't pitch to this guy?
He walked intentionally.
He was
a threat, man.
I thought I was watching Jackie Robinson at the plate. I was watching Jackie Robinson at the plate. I thought I was back in Ebbets Field.
And they've been showing that all week, by the way, that movie that was made last year. Next one, Cass.
42
Jackie,
I think people don't understand. They don't understand. Let's get back to Barry for a second. The record for most intentional walks in one season was 50, held by Willie McCovey. Okay, Barry shattered that 2 or 3 times, but to be walked 101 intentional times, 101 times intentional. He walked 235 times that year. Greg Maddux, who's going into the Hall of Fame this year, has the most wins of any active live pitcher, said that Barry Bonds came to the plate on base. I remember the great Eddie Murray, whose birthday we salute tomorrow on the 24th. We've got to give him a call, him and that of Floyd Mayweather Jr. Barry, we were talking one day, and Eddie said, you know, he said, well, Barry only sees 2 strikes a game. and he's right on him. Right on him. The two strikes a game. And something that Chris Chambliss, talk about the Yankees, Chris Chambliss was the batting coach of the Yankees, got fired. And they had just won the World Championship. Got fired. How do you get fired as the batting coach of the World Champions? You know, but Chris talked about that, you know, Barry showed up on the bat, and he said, and I tried to get other guys to do that. But, I mean, the question, we talk about, you know, the Cano thing, is how does that happen? How do you get fired as the batting champion, the batting coach of the World Champions? How does that happen? I mean, how do you get fired
on the road as the manager of the New York Mets? And you've been covering sports way longer than all of us put together, but – in your
I've never seen a manager get fired on the road and in the midst of a winning streak. Never seen it.
Willie Randle.
And they got rid of Willie. I mean, because when they fired Willie Mays, who was a coach way back in the 70s, mid-70s, Willie was a coach, and after Miss Payson died, They said, like, Willie, what's your function around here? I mean, what aspect of baseball can Willie Mays not teach? What aspect of baseball could Willie Mays not teach? The greatest player who ever lived, hit over. Okay, 660 home runs.
Say hey, kid.
I mean, not only that, when Willie Mays retired from baseball, he was the first only player ever, that's capital EVR, ever, hit over 500 home runs, hit over 500 doubles, and hit 3,000. And get over 3,000 base hits. The only player ever to do that. There's only been four players to do it. They're all minorities. Well, he was the first. I told people this. If you gave, because they always talked about Mays DiMaggio, if you gave Joe DiMaggio 100 home runs for the 3 years that he was in the military,
right,
he'd have only one more home run than Willie Mays. Is that astonishing? He'd have only one more home run than Willie Mays. And we haven't done the adjustment to Willie. Let's do this. Let's give Willie. Okay, let's make some adjustments here. Let's give Willie, he played 13 years in Kansas City Park. He had to hit 10 balls a year that went out in any other ballpark. So let's add 130 home runs to the 660. That's 790. Okay? Let's also give Willie 100 home runs or 90 home runs for the 2 years he missed in the military. That's over 800 home runs.
I got one better than that one. And
hold on, Jonesy.
Right.
Hold on, Jonesy. And here's another fact. In a year, in 1965, when Willie Mays hit 52 home runs, if he didn't play in Kansas City Park, he'd have broke Roger Maris' record over 67 home runs. Great. Before you go, Jonesy, Willie Mays is the only home run hitter ever to lead the league in stolen bases. First black player to do 30-30 and almost did 40-40. Nobody will ever be greater than Willie Mays. So how do you fire Willie Mays as a coach? So when the Mets got rid of Willie Mays, then I was done with him. And when they got rid of Willie, I can't even think about him again. Go ahead, Jonesy.
Well, first of all, how Willie Randolph hasn't even been considered, the atrocity, to further enhance that atrocity, how has Willie Randolph not even been considered as a manager today? That's the first thing. The second thing, so we know the answer to that one.
I'm going to use a term that Muhammad Ali uses. He's not the complexion of the connection.
Well, there you have it. Speaking of the complexion, talk about players like Willie Mays, Jackie Robinson, Hank Aaron. We go to 1947. Do you know that pretty much all the records before 1947 need to have an asterisk?
You know, Jonesy,
they
still
have an asterisk
if they were
both those records were
broken.
Well, you
know what? You,
before
Rooney,
black players
Jonesy,
were allowed
what
to
before
1947,
what
they
I said
about
that
until
they should have an asterisk.
The point I make is baseball doesn't start in 1947. And if you go into the National League,
exactly,
we've got a good half of life. If you go into the National League, okay, when Jackie Robinson came in, Jackie Robinson won the Rookie of the Year Award in 1947. Do you know how good Jackie Robinson had to be? There was only one rookie. It was the first year they ever gave the award. And they only gave one award for both leagues. Okay? Jackie Robinson won it. Jackie Robinson won the award. From 1949 to 1969 in the National League, okay, you had only two, three non-black players wins the MVP award. Jackie won it in 49. Roy Campanella, 51, 53, 55. Willie Mays,
Jackie won it in
47.
You're talking about
talking
MVP
about
or Rookie of the Year?
No. Okay, Jonesy, back up now, baby. Calm down. Jackie won Rookie of the Year in 47. Jackie won MVP in 49.
That's what I was saying.
Okay. From 49 to 69, a 20-year period, okay, only three non-black players won MVP award in the National League. Ernie Banks was the first player to win it back in 58-59. And in 1956, when Don Newcomb won the MVP award, he also won the Cy Young Award.
Again,
it was the first time the award was ever given, okay? And it was an award that was for both leagues. Only one player could get it, and it was for both leagues. And once again, so if you look at from 49 to 69, with the exception of Koufax, Boyer, and Kanowski, Campanella won it three times. Ernie Banks won it twice. Hank Aaron won it. Frank Robinson won it. Willie Mays won it. It just shows the point that you make. And also, the Rookie of the Year award was won hands down by African-American players. So
right.
I agree 100% with you. I mean, but if you
As
look
a matter
at
of
it,
fact, right, absolutely, Doc. To sum it up, baseball became the national pastime in 1947 when the African-American and Latino players were finally – allowed to play the game.
And understand that
That's
there was
when it
a
became
quota.
A national pastime.
Understand there was a quota also. I mean, you know, you couldn't have – I mean, the reason why Roberto Clemente wound up in Pittsburgh, because Roberto Clemente was in the Dodger organization. Roberto Clemente should have been the next right fielder in Ebbets Field. But you had a quota system, so you couldn't have – but how many? Because the Dodgers were way past the quota system. So the Dodgers were trying to hide the great one. Roberto Walker Clemente, okay? Actually, Roberto Clemente Walker, they were trying to hide Clemente in the Pittsburgh farm, in the Dodger farm system. The Pirates told the Dodgers, we know he's there. They used to do the regular thing. Clemente would reschedule, they would pull him out of the game. And the Pirates told the Dodgers, do what you want, we're going to take him. Now, the sad part about it was in 1960, when Clemente should have won the MVP award, they gave it to Dick Groats. And the sad and touching thing about that whole story was that Pittsburgh beat writers were telling the writers from around the country, don't vote for Roberto Clemente. Can you believe this? They were telling the writers, okay, you Smitty from New York, Dusty from New York, don't vote for Roberto Clemente. Roberto Clemente should have won MVP in 1960. I mean, the racism is never going to change. The reason why Bill Wright resigned, he told me back when he resigned, he said they're not going to change. But the point you make, and you're right, baseball shouldn't really start till 1947. Joe Black, the first black player, Black History Month, to win a World Series game, you know, to show you how colorblind black people are, you know, he looked around one day and his friends told him, you know, Joe, this is it for you. You know, there are no black players in Major League Baseball, so your career is over.
Crazy. After all that, you still have, what, less than, what, 2% of the populace that plays baseball right now is black?
That's right.
And, you know what, I told
2014.
I told Ken Griffey Jr. about 20 years ago, and we were saying, I said, you know, there are less black players in baseball today than there were 20 years before that.
Right.
And Harold Reynolds told me a point that was so profound, and just sometimes the obvious is you can't see it because you're not looking for it. And he said, you know what? He said, there are no black or Latin pitchers in Major League Baseball who can't throw hard. Once you no longer can bring the heat, you're gone. I mean, a black or Latin pitcher that can't throw hard anymore
remember what you were saying to me the other day when we were having this conversation about Big Poppy? When he was saying how they were looking to do something to him, and he was like, my number's
Rick Henderson told me, he said, Reggie Jackson told him one time, don't do too much. So they'll expect it every year. And then so I'm sitting down with Dave Ortiz, and he said, you know, the year I hit 47 home runs, well, the next year I came back, I hit 37, but my batting average was 10 points higher, and I drove in another 9-10 runs. But they wanted to give me a salary cut. He said, well, whoa, wait a minute, okay. So I didn't hit 43. I hit 37. but I gave you 10 points more on my batting average and drove in another 10 runs, and you want to give me a cut?
You're bringing that up, and one of the things that I'm thinking about now is, you know, you got a guy like Yasiel Puig right now who came out like on fire last season, and I'm waiting to see what's going to happen now this season if he doesn't do just as good as he did last season. I'm waiting to see what happens with him, you know, because he was another one that they were talking about too last season because his numbers were ridiculous. We'll see what happens. Plus, he won the home run.
The thing I look at too, lady, since we're with baseball, I mean, you have to understand. I found out, you know, back in Jackie Robinson's day, if you had an argument with Empire, if you put a towel around your neck, that meant that the Empire had blew the call, had choked the call, and they threw Jackie out of a particular game. I looked at Doc Gooden. Doc Gooden won 196 games. You mean to tell me nobody could have let Doc stay around to win four more games? I mean, how many times have you seen that over the years, that let a guy come back the next year to get 3,000 hits, let a guy come back to get 200? You could have done that. And I remember Ricky Henderson, and if Dusty remembers this too, Ricky Henderson had 3,000 hits. And they weren't going to let Ricky play the last game of the year to get the hit. He had 299. He needed one hit for 3,000. They weren't going to let Ricky Henderson play the last game of the year to get a shot at 3,000 hits. And I remember, you know, and Ricky didn't say anything, and he said, you know, he didn't want to step on Gwynn's word. Tony said, you know, you're not stepping on my parade. But to think that they weren't going to let Ricky Henderson, can you believe this guy needed one hit for 3,000 hits, it's the last game of the year, and they weren't going to play him.
Well, and, you know, you can't get away from the fact that the contest between Dave Winfield and Don Mattingly. They were neck and neck for the and they sat down Don Mattingly to protect his average, and Dave Winfield grounded out and he came in 2% less than Don Mattingly, and Mattingly got the freaking batting title. I mean, those are the games that were played. I mean, why did Dave Winfield didn't protect that? They wanted to protect Mattingly. They wanted to protect Donnie Baseball.
When Reyes took himself out of the game and like his last game as a Met or something. And was leading the league in hitting and said, well, all right, I had enough for the day. You know, this game is getting rich anyway.
He did the same thing.
They worried him about it. For it.
Yeah, so
I
what?
Was very negative about the game.
But he didn't do anything that wasn't done.
Remember Wade Boggs. When Wade Boggs was fighting it out with Mattingly, he sat down. Here's another one. Remember when George Brett won the batting title over Ricky Henderson? He got ahead of Henderson. He sat down. I remember. I read a quote where he said, you know, old Jackson and so-and-so said I should sit down. Well, if they told you to jump off the roof, would you do that too? You know what I mean? I mean, you look at Ted Williams. When Ted Williams was at 400 the last game of the year, Ted said, hey, man, I'm playing. Now, I'm going to hit 400 or I'm not going to hit 400. And I remember they did that too in the George Brett and the Ricky Henderson thing. But when Brett got ahead of Ricky Henderson, he sat down. And once again, as long as they do it, it's all right. You know, as long as they do it, it's all right. And in the words of Howard Weston, sad and touching. And these things just constantly remind you that as long as things change, they remain the same. You know, and as Bill White said, they're not going to change. And, you know, the stories are endless. They're countless of these sort of things. I mean, I look back at baseball. How come nobody ever asked Willie Mays or Hank Aaron to manage? You know?
Doc, let me give you an answer to that. Let me give you an answer. How come they never asked? First of all, you have to understand their attitude. Now, they're guys, and this is like official and unofficial. They're guys who, when they retired, they never wanted to get back into uniform. Doc. Oh, Jesus Christ. How could I forget? Oh my God! Derek. Derek Jeter. He says, did you reach that press conference Tuesday?
That was so funny. When he asked him to come back,
he says, I'm not coming back. I'm going into the corporate world. I want nothing to do with baseball. This, that, and the other. Okay? Now, a lot of these guys, you can't say why then they were offered. Maybe they were offered, maybe they weren't, or maybe they were just left to the side. But the fact of it, you got to look at the mindset of these guys who says, I don't want to be traveling anymore. I don't want to be living out of a uniform. I don't want to be high for 3 years and have to do with 24 knotheads. Let me answer what you started. Okay?
Right.
You got a guy, and this will brace my heart, you got a guy like Elston Howard who interviewed every goddamn season. Every goddamn season there were no other candidates for Yankee manager, and the man every year was goddamn rejected. The man, to me, died of a heart attack. I think he died of a broken heart.
A broken heart.
Because he wanted to manage the Yankees, and every year, like a little puppet, he went there to interview, but he wasn't good enough. Yet he could run that goddamn team blindfolded. He had to take up, put up with Billy Martin.
And he played a position that people always talk about.
It was a catcher.
It
was a catcher, exactly.
To win the MVP. Yeah.
And you have to deal with that five-time rum pot, Billy Martin, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and all them other suckers that they resurrected out of the baseball graveyard. And meantime, Elston Howard had to sit there like a freaking puppet. You have to understand the mindset. You have to understand whether Willie Mays wanted it
or
the other guys didn't want it.
The question I'm just shooting out there is like, when the job opening came for the Nets, and the great Miami Boykin, Miami B. Boykin, Black Bodacious, being a brother, he wrote an article, Why Not Clyde? And I remember I took the article to Clyde, and Clyde said, hey, man, thanks. Tell Boykin, thanks a lot. And there was a sports writer who said, well, you know, Clyde, you know, Clyde doesn't want to coach. And Clyde said, yeah, I would like the opportunity to coach. I mean, who wouldn't like the opportunity to make five times what you're making? Who wouldn't like the opportunity to get into the venue? But it's what you just alluded to, Dusty, the opportunity and the mindset. Dr. Gunning's working the Block Talk Radio.
Remember Bill Robinson? Bill Robinson, the first base coach of the Mets? Because he had the audacity to say, I want to put him for manager next year. He was ousted, isolated, fired, sent down to the minor leagues,
closed down to New Jersey
somewhere.
Also, when Frank Robinson managed, he had to go down to the minor leagues. Joe Girardi had to – look at Joe Girardi. In fact, Lou Piniella had no experience, but Girardi –
yeah, but you have to understand that Bill Robinson was a different case. He was never allowed back. He went to the super triple minor invisible baseball league, not anything with the major leagues. He was never allowed to.
You look at Piniella.
When he was the hitting coach with the Mets.
Yeah,
he was the hitting coach with Bill Robinson.
You look at Girardi. Here's a guy who got fired as manager of his team, a second division team. And won the Manager of the Year award that year over Willie Randolph. Won the Manager of the Year award over Willie Randolph. He got fired, and guess what?
With a losing team. With a team that had a
losing team, and Joe Torre brings him in instead of bringing Willie Randolph.
Fired.
That's a bunch of crap, man.
Doc Stanley, Sports Net Block Talk Radio on the Trust of Government. We got a good submit. Lady A, in the boxing world, because we got that fight next week coming up with Chavez. You've had your say on
Ryan Vera?
You don't feel Khan is a worthy enough opponent to fight Mayweather? I mean, I think that...
Of course he is. He'll make $3 million. So what?
Well, I'm saying...
Nobody wants to see Khan again, Doc. Everybody's trying Khan. Nobody wants to see Khan.
But he's the biggest name out there for him right now.
Nobody wants to see him, Doc. He's not a draw to begin with.
Look, you know... All of us here, understand one bottom line, please. This is where I come from, left field or right field or center field. You got to understand one thing. All of us in this business, these guys in the business are out to make as much money as they can in the hurt business. Hold a second. If Khan's name is thrown into the wax as one of his tomato cans to fulfill to fulfill Mayweather's six-fight contract of two, you guys tell me, $300 million with Showtime. He's going to do it because the direction is to keep Mayweather undefeated. He'll retire 49-0. Remember, Doc, when we went to the press conference and I asked him about doing a 5-0? Oh, well, no, I don't want to duplicate. I don't want to talk about that. Okay, now, the idiot is as smart as a fox. Remember, he went out on two occasions and he tells Mayweather, no, I'm not fighting Mayweather. I'm not fighting Pacquiao. Pacquiao, you are not up to my level. Are you for real? You fighting the ghost Guerrero, a burnt-out Shane Mosley? Well, Pacquiao is not up to it. Why? Because he wants to fight these supermarket tomato cans to remain undefeated. That's exactly what he's doing. So now Khan says, I want to fight him. So, of course, Khan is going to make $3 or $4 million pay-per-view. Mayweather makes another $45 million plus pay-per-view. That's four dead bodies. Now he got two more. Oh, he'll take Maidana, or maybe he'll take, but he's not going to challenge Bradley. He's not going to challenge Pacquiao. He's going to he says something. When he came back from Africa, he says, you know, I don't mind fighting in Africa in one of my fights. So he's going to find some you know, Ugandan over there that can throw a left hook and fight him?
There's two things here. He's not going to fight in Africa because all his fights have to be in Vegas,
they don't have to be in Vegas, Doc.
So you're saying that he's killing two birds with one stone.
Yeah. Absolutely.
He's fulfilling the fight contract?
Bradley.
He's going to go out undefeated. Absolutely, that's what it is. Showtime don't care.
I think he's going to fight everything in Vegas. I think he's talking. He's two things here. He's not going to fight Pacquiao Bradley for two reasons. He's not going to let the fight happen. Second of all, he's not going to fight in Africa because you got to fight everything in Vegas. Lady A,
he will beat both of those guys. He will beat Bradley.
I can't hear
you,
Doc.
He will beat Pacquiao.
I'm saying that Mayweather is just same thing that Caldo was talking about, turning down the big money. Mayweather's not going to fight anybody in top rank until they're out of top rank, and he's not going to Africa because everything has to be fought in Vegas.
He doesn't have to fight in Vegas. He can fight any way he wants.
Yeah.
He dictates, but he prefers Vegas. But he doesn't
Hold on. Go ahead. Give me your thoughts on that.
All right. Here's my thing. You know, bottom line is, number one, everybody wants to see Pacquiao and Mayweather, okay? That's the fun. Everybody wants to see that fight. But they're not going to get it. Dusty and I have been talking about that for the longest. Because Top Rank and Golden Boy, okay, Top Rank and Mayweather.
TMT.
Yeah, Mayweather. They're not going to come to an agreement. It's not going to happen. That fight is not going to happen. And Mayweather, I'm going to tell you right now, he is not going to be able to top that last fight he had with Alvarez. He could go out there. He could try to do what he can do. He can use the Swami's like version of, oh, my God, it's going to be the greatest fight of the year.
What about a rematch with Alvarez? I mean, could they
match?
Alvarez doesn't want it.
The general public is going to want to see that just because of the way
let me ask Doc this question. Doc, can Floyd still make 47?
Huh?
Can Floyd still make 47?
Of course. Anytime.
Let me ask you something. What does anybody have to say about the Latin kid, the 140-pound champion who's that
Danny Garcia.
I'll tell you this. There's only one guy right now that I can see that And Dusty and I threw the name out there, he's not going to fight him, which is Keith Thurman. Keith Thurman at 147 right now is the only guy he really hasn't even looked at. Okay, to
forget
fight.
About it.
And I really hope he
does. Hold tight. What we're going to do, a mic on, lights off. We're going to get us talking like we haven't talked before. Doc Stanley, sponsors at Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guardian Network. We're going to, because the panel's here, boy, we're hot and heavy. Rudy, let's take us out. Let's bring us back as you can. Rudy returns. Sports in depth, mic on, lights off momentarily. Doc Stanley and the crew. Rooney, showtime.
Good doctor. Pleasure to be back. The Sports in Depth Nation's been here. the Sports In Depth panel's been here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I've been here. We've been here courtesy of the Trusting God Radio Network, and the store that serves the drink has been here. And that's been the incomparable Doc Stanley. Stay tuned for Sports In Depth. Mic's on, lights off.
Yeah. Okay. Mike, turn the lights down. All right, turn them off. Turn them off. Turn them off, baby. Sonia's back. Sonia's back. And, hey, the crew is here. As they was in rare form. Doc Stanley, Sports Net Blog Talk Radio on the Trust in God Network. Rudy returns. And with his return, we're going to go mic on. Mic's off. Got a lot to say. Rosie! So glad that you can join us again from Volta Redonda in Brazil. When you return, so without further ado, back to Lady A, we go to you. We're talking about the sweet signs. We're talking about Pacquiao. We're talking about Mayweather. We're talking about boxing. Ladies and gentlemen, Lady A kicks it off. Mic on. Lights off. Sports In Depth Blog Talk Radio on the Trust in God Radio Network. Lady A, have your say.
What up? We were talking about Mayweather and him, and I think Rudy was talking about him at 147. You know, fighting at 147. I was saying that I felt that, you know, one name that's in the mix that he still hasn't fought at 147, which could possibly give him some kind of challenge, was going to be Keith Thurman at 147. Now, I don't know what everyone else on the panel's feeling is about that, but I'll tell you right now, Keith Thurman will give him a run for his money at 147. As far as him fighting somebody at 154, I always felt he should have fought Eddie Zanellara only because he did beat Angulo and he beat Trout. So I thought that he was the next guy that should have been able to fight, you know, to fight Mayweather if at 154 he was going to go up. But I don't really see that happening. I see, once again, we were discussing earlier about the contest between him and Khan. As far as Khan goes, y'all already know my opinion about Khan. You know, I think it would be a much more interesting fight if he fought Maidana as opposed to Khan. He was initially making it the choice of the fans. You know, I guess there was some kind of controversy with him fighting Khan because apparently all the fans picked Khan over Maidana. I guess because of his popularity over Maidana, and I guess he got rumblings about the fans or some people not being too happy about that, so that's why he decided now it's going back and forth whether he's going to fight Maidana or Khan. So I don't know.
But you see, you have to understand this, everybody, Lady A, everybody. Floyd Mayweather is a protected fighter. Why do I say that? Because he has to go down the wire to his 47 and 0. And he has the choice of picking the dead bodies. The dead bodies which may give you an outside chance of thinking that they can beat him, the Khans, the Maidanas, and guys of that nature. That will... See, let me just go back. The biggest threat to Mayweather right now was Canelo Alvarez, and they figured, oh, man, slam dunk. But they didn't realize how sharp and good and fast and smart of a ring general Mayweather was. He took the dude to school.
At 37 years old.
At 37,
he said that in the fact that he
took the dude,
was a stupid of fight yeah. last thing, but that's beside the point.
Took the dude to school and slapped him for 12 rounds. Canelo, his mind is scrambled eggs right now. So now, what do I do to continue this momentum? Everybody, there's nobody. So he has to pick and choose the bodies. He's not going to go any weight class. I can guarantee you he's going to stay at 47. That's number one. Number two, He's gonna go with Khan. Khan wants to fight him. Khan says, I can beat him, this, that, and the other. Hey, Khan will pick up his $3 million. Mayweather will pick up his $45 million,
but
and boom, body's gone. Now maybe
nobody
he'll...
Nobody wants to see Khan.
Who cares? But folks, understand me.
Khan stated on Friday.
So what? You know, folks, listen.
But they said he tweeted out.
Please, listen, we're supposed to be analysts, not I don't like this guy, and I don't care.
Right.
It doesn't matter. Mayweather is going to pick the dead bodies that he wants, and we either leap, either we lump it or we don't see it. Understand?
Calm
promises a fight. He's taller than Mayweather. He's fast. He's this, that, and the other, but he's going to be the next body. Maybe he'll go... Maybe he'll go after Maidana. Maybe he'll go after Danny Garcia.
You know the better fight is Maidana than it. Come on.
Who cares? But, who cares? The choice is Mayweather. He's the ringmaster. And he says, give me Khan.
Why don't you just let the guy go on and start picking cab drivers?
No. Well, he's already in the supermarket picking up tomato cans, so he might as well pick up whoever he wants. But it's the man who, listen, folks, keep an open mind. The one who dictates is Floyd Mayweather. And if Khan says, I want to fight, it doesn't matter, Lady A, whether you don't like it, whether I don't like it, whether nobody likes it.
It's not a situation. I mean, you know, we can stop. I mean, you made the point, and there's no question. Mayweather is going to pick who he's going to pick, and he's picking the best of a sad lot. And time will tell on that. Hold again. Let's give Wings. I want to get to you. What's the feeling? I know everybody's got a little thing to. Sam came out openly gay football player. One of the things you like
nothing
about that too. That you got to take your hat off to. And his teammates said, "Hey man, we knew about this a long time ago. We knew about this a long time ago.
Well, the
and
gay
we
football
accepted
player.
Him, and yeah, and we protected him." And Dante Stallworth said, you know, it's going to be hard to be a gay athlete, a gay football player, in pro football. He felt that this is the hardest
because they're
sport.
Stupid. That's why.
Yeah, for him to
they said
fail
the same thing about Jackie Robinson.
Well,
it's going to be hard.
I don't see that.
I need silence now. We're not talking about the first black player in baseball. Okay, we understand the bullshit that Jackie went through. Because we're still going through that bullshit, okay? But we're talking about the question I'm asking Wings is what's his feeling because it's the feeling that this guy cannot make it in the NFL as a gay football player. They may be wrong, you know.
Well, I think he's definitely going to get drafted, and I was talking to Hoosa about this. I don't think he's going to last any time past the second round. Even the Jets – Sheldon Richardson, who they were both roommates in the 2012 season for the Missouri Tigers, he said he even knew about it and that didn't affect his relationship. And then you piggyback on what just happened down in Miami, which is continuing to happen transpire after the firing of the offensive line coach and the head athletic trainer with all the fallout. And with Roger Goodell also having a gay brother, I think that coaches.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah, gay brother.
Yeah, he has a gay brother. I think that he will be protected.
Yeah.
I think with the fallout that happened in Miami and with all of the media behind that and the way that Roger Goodell handles himself is bringing the hammer. And remember, I said this on Blake Radio, that he was going to hammer the New Orleans Saints, and he did that.
Can I just throw a question, a statement here? You know, I think that one of the things you got to look at, too, and you could correct me if I'm wrong, C-Wings, you know, this past year, the last few years, I think that a very negative cloud has been painted over the NFL, especially like now when you look at the Aaron Hernandez case, you know, the Dolphins case, the New Orleans case, you know, these are all things that have a tendency to snowball when they're not properly. And also, you know, another thing that's always been a question like the last few years has been the equipment now because of all the concussions that have been received in football. So I think that, you know, this situation now and it being brought to light is their way, if they're going to be able to do something and clean something up and show something positive on the side of the NFL, they need to address this and address it the right way.
Yeah, but
because
you see,
of all the negativity that's been painted over the NFL for the last few years.
Yeah, but
that's
you see, the point here is that this is a homophobic situation. has nothing to do with the injuries and all the abuses. Here is a man who plays football who happens to be gay. If I'm on the right track,
I don't think he's the only gay player.
Well, exactly.
But
what I'm saying that what I'm saying is that he's come out. Now, how are they going?
They have had gay football players, gay baseball players, gay basketball players.
Yeah, but listen to the point.
Wrestling as well.
But listen to the point. How is he going to be treated in the locker room? While the rest of the other ball players, they better watch themselves. They better do what because he's another ball player who's as good as them or better just because of his preferences.
Let me say this, okay? If he starts to fall, if Sam starts to fall in the in the draft, it's not going to be because he's gay. It'll be because the guy weighs 258 and he's trying to play on the line, okay? If he starts to fall ever so slightly, that will be the reason, because the guy's 258 and trying to play on the pro defensive line. You can get away with that in college. I don't know if you can get away with that in the pros unless you're extra special.
So, Rudy, so you're saying, so you're saying, Rudy, that you feel he's going to get a fair chance.
He better get a fair chance.
Let me tell you something, all right, Doc, and I mean this sincerely. If I'm coaching one of these teams or whatever, if I think you can help me win, I don't give a damn what persuasion you are, what color you are, what your nationality is. If I think you can help me win football games, I'll pick you. And if anybody gives you a hard time on my team, like Brad Tricky told those dudes with Jackie Robinson, if you can't play with them, you're free to go. I'll trade you happily.
Okay, so Wings, we'll get back to you. You're a football guy. You're an expert. You know about the draft, and brought some amazing points. Once again, how many people knew about Goodell's brother? And this is why Sports Network is the greatest because of my crew here. Rooney has said, and welcome back, Rooney. He's going to get a fair chance.
Cool.
But now, how many people are going to say if he doesn't make it? That was why. I mean, because Rooney said, Ty Cobb was a devout racist, a known member of the Klan, you know what I mean? But Faces Loaded, my cousin Louie and Ty goes in. Okay, do you agree with
Well, I think that it's a good business decision on his part, being with all the things that are happening in the world, in this country, with the legalization of same-sex marriages. I think that, and like Lady A said, with all of the incidents happening in the NFL, coupled with players getting arrested, the different things in the locker rooms with the Jets a couple of years ago, the allegation was, harassment against a female reporter and different things like that.
Sexual
you didn't understand. Roger Goodell is the commissioner for a reason. And the owners have
Can you say that one more time?
Roger Goodell is the commissioner for a reason. And the owners pay him lovely. He's going to do everything in his power to protect that shield of the number one grossing sport in the United States of America is the National Football League, and he's going to do what he has to do to protect that NFL shield. And the spotlight is going to be on each and every locker room just based on what happened in Miami. I think that helps him. That helps him. And like I said, Roger Goodell also has a gay brother. But, everyone is focusing on Jason Collins as being the first professional athlete to come out as gay. I have to differ with that. I think it was Cheryl Swoops back in 2004, 2005 when she was playing with the Comets at the time. She came out, but it wasn't a big to-do, wasn't a big media event. That's the only professional athlete that I could think that actually came out. Even Billie Jean King, she didn't come out, even though she was outed by a lover or someone in her life.
Yeah, but after her,
she was outed, but she, I think it was like 80 or 81, Because remember, she was married to Larry King or something like that. And she started to have, I think, relationships with women at that time. And someone, one of her lovers tried to out her. She denied it, but she also lost a lot of her endorsements at that time.
Yeah.
So I think this is a pivotal point.
Amazing. What's in depth, the world in depth, and right here with the crew, as only they can do, just take you to a whole nother level. And when you leave here, fans, not only do you get the updates and the latest in the world of sports, you get a history lesson right here on Sports in Depth.
In other words, every infraction under Goodell's doormat is going to be handled as per rules and regulations. So this dude who just beat up his wife the other day, Rice, was it?
Rice and his fiancée were both arrested.
Yeah, but he was dragging his wife through the corridor by her hair. I mean, you know, I mean, the films caught that. I saw that. But what I'm saying is that reflects on the comportment of the football player because he plays for a big NFL league.
Here's a question. Okay, with the acceptance of the gay player, we know subsequently other people are going to come out. But does this bring... This is the number one grossing sport in America. Does this bring more fans? Wings?
No. I don't know if this per se may bring more fans into it. I just think that the world is going to be looking at this and see how he's embraced in the world of the National Football League. Because you got to understand, the perception of the football players are these big, burly, grunge.
Mucho
type.
Macho.
that's not the case. I mean, these
are just that's why a lot of guys did a lot of times a story about Winfield Wright and how a lot of guys have been suffering over the course of the last decades or so with these injuries and head injuries. But what you just said, that macho image of the pro football player doesn't happen to me, and you don't do that. You're saying you don't see a higher attendance due to this. Harold, you also said no. Why, Harold?
Because it doesn't. I mean, they have already, you know what I'm saying? They already tried those tricks already and it hasn't occurred yet. Okay? They did it in boxing when the kid came out in boxing and said that he was gay. Okay?
Right.
They put, right after he said he was gay, they put him in the world championship fight.
Right.
Okay? And, you know, they intended to go and he got knocked out.
He got beat up badly.
You know, we don't care about, the best gay fight I saw was Emil Griffin. Okay?
Amen.
Can't get no better. Okay? But the reason why people saw him is because he can fight. And because he's gay, because he can fight.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like what he didn't broadcast it all over. He didn't have to. He didn't have to. People knew he was gay. But you don't have to tell it, and all of these guys are just trying to get publicity because their name is not out there coming out of college like Michael Jordan or, you know, like Kobe or those guys. So what they do, they trying to rile up something. So what they rile up is their sex image, okay? Can a guy come out there and say, hey, man, I want to announce that I got 5 women, all right, and I just love women, and all these women are mine. Can he say that? No,
you also have to look, and I think Rooney could back me up on this, that this is nothing new in the world of sports. I mean, you could go back into the late 80s, early 90s with the World Wrestling Federation. There were allegations that former wrestler WWF at that time.
Ricky Starr.
It was Pat Patterson. Was alleged to have been gay through reports, and that he was, going towards other wrestlers in the locker room, and you know there was some sort of beef between the two people, that he even tried to come on to some wrestlers in the locker room. Do you remember that, Rooney?
Yeah. I remember hearing about that wrestler that was gay in wrestling and everything, but they didn't make a big issue out of that whole thing. That's what I'm saying. The thing is that if Sam can play, and we know he's in a contact sport, if he don't get his hip broke, He don't get his leg broken, okay? He don't get a concussion, all right? Let's understand it. Does the commissioner now say, okay, you can't hit him too hard because, you know, we got to save him? Do we go there? Because he's going to get hit. He's going to get hit two times harder than the other guys. Believe me. Then
right.
We do have certain other group of people that don't like certain other people, and believe me, they're going to attack him, and they're not going to be fair. All right? He's in a combat, and he's coming from college into the pros now. And we all know what's going to happen now.
Didn't Jackie Robinson get spiked on purpose on his legs? And his
yes,
knees
he did.
The reason why Jackie Robinson played first base, because they didn't want him at second base because the guys would try to slide into him at second base on a double play. So the reason why he played first base, he was out of less harm's way. First base, I didn't say he didn't get spiked. And the point was that he would get the opportunity to spike him was less greater at first base than it was at second base. And at first base, he could readily move himself out of arm's way. Second base, he had to turn to double play. Second base, those days, you had to step to the back.
Can I ask this question? I really got to put this because this has been bothering me all day, right? All the people in sports, is the only athlete that come out there that gets black and Hispanic, is there any white guys?
Why what?
I'm sure they are, but
why
haven't
they
come out. I just think that this is a time, it's a pivotal time in our world and which sports fall within our world.
Why is all the black athletes?
That's right.
When we see the parade and we see it's more white. In a parade being gay. So what are we talking about here?
But you know how it's a tremendous question, but I think in a lot of cases they come out as a defensive mechanism. You know what I mean? So what you're saying now, that you know they're going to be focused on, and that to a certain degree is a defensive mechanism. You know, you're going to see them, you're going to watch them. So there's certain things. When Jackie Robinson came to the major leagues. His roommates told him, man, there's certain things that are going to be better for you in the white leagues now because they can't do to you what we can do here. And I think in a lot of ways, I'm not 100%, it's a defensive mechanism. There's more visibility. You're more aware of them. And therefore, to a certain degree, besides coming out and you talk about publicity, it's also, I think, minutely a defensive mechanism. Run with it, gang. Talk to me.
I mean, I just think it's a different time because if you remember, there were rumors and stories about the head of the FBI at the time, J. Edgar Hoover.
That never came out
when he was in there.
My point is, fellas, I'm still trying to find out why, if it's so, we don't care. I really don't even care about what you are. I just want to know if you can play or you can fight or whatever
no
you
to
do. My point is,
no
why
answer.
Is it all
there's
the
no
black
answer.
Guys have come out and we ain't seen one white guy say it yet?
I think a lot of it, too, is media. You know, if they feel that it's not advantageous for them, because understand, you know, we in New York City, 21st century, 2014, we ain't got a daily black newspaper in New York City. So, you know, the media plays a big part in this. And like you're right, Hal, when you go to parade, they outnumber us. But a lot of it is perception. And if they don't feel that it's advantageous for that white athlete to come out, then the story's not done. I mean, how many times they talked about the day at Babe Ruth, there were things done. People say, man, hey, we can't report that story in the Babe. So I think a lot of that, too, is besides defensive measures, they control the media. And when they feel it's
And my point, too, is they signed Collins today to the Nets, right, for 10 days. What does he bring to the team? I mean, he ain't got the numbers to be talking about taking him to the championship, so what does he bring to the team?
I don't think he can hurt the team, but they obviously feel that he may be able to contribute some way, somehow.
He's never a defensive kind of player.
I think it's two things, Harold. I think they feel they can help him, but more importantly, for 10 days, Harold, they got media. People are going to come to see this gay guy. And you know what? They're happy for it. Hey, we got what we want out of this 10-day contract. That could be the reason, too. Come on, gang, talk to me. Anybody got a feeling of this? Come on, Lady A.
I was talking to Hoops about that the other day. I felt like maybe, you know, his contribution was more because they needed somebody down. I mean, the way I looked at it, I thought maybe they just needed somebody down at the, you know, in the front court.
Low post.
And in the low post to give him some help for Garnett. That's what I thought, and for Paul Pierce. But I may be wrong. I mean, Hoops would be the right guy to ask about that question, too. I mean, I think that that's one of the reasons why they had picked him up initially. I mean, to give him some help for the guys down low. I mean, it's getting close to playoff time. I think they needed that body to help them bang down low. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, you've had contracts like that before. I mean, they signed Ed Reed for year. I don't think he'll be back.
Last-minute contracts have been signed with these guys all the time. I mean, look at last week. Didn't they pick up, like, Kenyon Martin for, like, a few days, and then they ended up extending his contract? So, I don't know. I mean, I think it all depends on where the team's at and if they need, you know, they're close to the playoffs are starting soon, so they probably felt they needed an extra big body down low.
Because this was about 30-something games left in the season there?
Yeah, until the playoffs
start.
Amongst
these games. So, I mean, I just think, like Doc says, I don't think the team, even if they do think that, they're not going to come out and say that. I mean, I just think that the Nets, just playing in Brooklyn alone, gets a lot of press just for the fact that Brooklyn has the first professional basketball team since what, the Dodgers left?
57.
Yeah, since the Dodgers left. So, I mean, look at next year with the All-Star game. I think most of the festivities are going to take place at the Barclay with the actual game being played at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
You know. And the Barclay itself.
The Block Talk Radio, on the Trust and Garden Network. Rooney returns. It's 4th and Death Mike on. Lights off. The gang is still here. The first and only. The incomparable legendary Lady A. Hey, you know who he is. Dusty. H. Ray Brown X. Jr. Rooney, a.k.a. Little Coco, a.k.a. Mel. So, Sal Smith Jr. The Hoopster had to go back to the studio. But Mr. NFL 401 Cincinnati Sea Wings is here with us. Wings, while we got to talk football, what's happening with RG3? What happens? And Rudy, you got to have a take on this too. How big is next year for RG3, gentlemen?
Definitely a big year for him. You know, just with the injuries and all the stuff that was going around on the team at the time. Having run the 4-4-1-40 in 2012, it's a big season for him and the franchise. I mean, you're going to have a new coach with all the controversy about him, his father being in a locker room. I mean, he's going to have to put all that stuff behind him and produce, get healthy in this off season, and we'll see what happens. Also, Doc, congratulations to Tom Coughlin with his one-year extension. Mm-hmm. Remember, he signed a 3-year, $20 million contract in 2012, a couple of months after winning
okay.
The...
Wings, are you surprised by the extension?
Nope. Not the way that... No, I'm not. Because the Giants are not used to, having lame duck coaches like that. They don't really treat their coaches. They go through coaches like some other teams, and they'll fire the coach after one season. The Giants are not like that. That's old money. That's one of the first teams in the NFL. So it's a classy organization. So I'm not surprised by that. But you're going to have a lot of big names that are free agents this year. Justin Tuck, Hakeem Nicks, who I don't think is going to be back. He had no touchdowns for the year, only 56 receptions. 890-plus receiving yards. I don't see him coming back. Justin Tuck, Jerry
Reese. For 56 receptions, that was a lot of yards, but he just was non-existent. And I think in a lot of ways, Rooney, he was a problem with that team because you depended so much on Cruz, you could clean on Cruz, the running game was non-existent. You know, we're talking about Manning and the INTs, but Hakeem had to be a big disappointment and a big reason for the this was season they had last year, Rooney.
I think that's incumbent upon Eli. Eli was he should have been thrown to Hakeem Nicks instead of to the guys in the wrong jersey. So, you know, they have their offensive line is a major area that has to be fixed on the Giants. Not only in terms of protecting him better,
but also, you know, getting a running game going to kind of balance out their passing attack.
You had a lot of injuries on the Giants, too, last year.
Yeah.
Remember Hicks, he's been injured over the last couple of seasons. You had the right guard, Chris Knee.
Chris Knee, and then they brought Brandon Jacobs
David
back.
Bass.
And he got hurt right away.
Yeah,
David
but, you know,
Bass,
with that, what's happening at that Giants thing, the guys are getting older, and they're going to bring a whole new young crew together. Because after they saw how Seattle regrouped, and Seattle was a young team, and they went all the way to the Super Bowl and everything, and for 2 years they went in the playoff, and then they went to the Super Bowl with the young quarterback. My point is, what they're getting ready to do is just regroup this whole Giants team to a younger team. They see these young boys are really adapting quicker. You know, now you ain't got to wait 2 or 3 years to see the kids fall into place on the team no more. These kids now are learning these plays real quick, and they're more eager. And that's what they're seeing. They're getting ready to get rid of the old guys because the old guys are banged up, and they know that. They need a young legs today. And they're
well,
going to go
don't
with that.
Forget that. That Russell Wilson, the second black quarterback to ever win the
Super Bowl. Great point. Not mentioned, and, you know, they act like he didn't even exist there. He threw over 200 yards, got him to – I mean, like he was non-existent there. Like he was non-existent. I mean, it was just simply amazing. Like he was non-existent. The guy threw over 200 yards, touchdown pass, guided this offense. And they act like it was non-existent. I mean, you know, is this like a pun? Blacked out.
But you know what, Doc?
You
have to look at the Giants, too. They won the two Super Bowls.
Another thing just to detail, piggyback on what you guys just mentioned. I mean, I don't know if the whole entire group actually realized this, but not just win, but win convincingly. I mean, I think everyone this last Super Bowl, including myself, had Denver as winning, and just like this guy, the way he quarterbacked that game and the way they were able to win was just, I don't think there was one person in my group that I know that actually had Seattle as winning. Like, I mean, as convincingly as they did,
the key to that game was the defense of Seattle.
On the 49ers team did end up instigating it by taking his hand and pushing him in the face when the guy came out to extend his hand.
But the defense won that game, though.
Exactly.
Was he got off of his timing, and they had the man coverage. Remember, Peyton Manning
gets
rid of the ball in 1.8 seconds.
I could understand giving the defense their recognition, but to totally omit Russell, like he wasn't even there. I mean, they
right
know,
because
I mean,
of the fact, Doc. The reason this has happened is because Russell. See, they got this mindset that quarterbacks got to be over 6'5". Russell is only 5'11". First of all, he was drafted number by Denver. He would have been Peyton Manning's backup, but then Seattle took him because the 6'5" that they had did not cut the musket, and they got rid of it. They gave this guy a chance. Why? Because he's a scrambler. He had a rifle arm, and he played the playbook perfectly, and he fit right into Seattle. Add that to the defense of Seattle. Mind you, that this kid Wilson won. What was it? 27 games. And was it 29 wins or 7 losses or something? And most of it was Seattle. This kid was the real goods, but he was a short quarterback. Like they were talking about him and Doug Flutie, how they need quarterbacks that are over 6'5".
Hold on, it shows the hypocrisy of these guys. Who the hell is shorter than the quarterback, Drew Brees? Who the hell is shorter than Brees?
You have to understand scouting, and this is what made this kid
who he is.
How they did Big Blue.
Yeah.
They didn't give Big Blue the props that they did having won two Super Bowls like that.
Yeah.
And we talked about that before, how they would give other teams like New England
Green Bay, they would get more press coverage than Eli Manning and the New York Giants. It's like they never won the Super Bowl.
Well, no, a lot of that.
You're the number
one
media capital of the country.
Yeah, but you know what? A lot of that is an anti-New York sentiment. And the question you made is a good point. How can you be from the media capital of the world and not get to me? Rudy, did Rudy go back to the studio? Rudy, you still with us? You with the studio? Okay. That's going to make you still there. I mean, yeah, how can, you know, sad and touching. That's Dennis Woods at Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guardian Network. Michael on Lights Off segment. Going around real quick. Lady A, what's the final word on boxing you got for us, Gerald?
Well, you know, you got the fight coming up on the 1st. You know, you got Julio Cesar Chavez fighting Brian Vera on the 1st. And then I think on the 8th, on the 8th, you got the Canelo Alves Alfredo Angulo fight. That's going to be at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas. On the 15th, you got Dusty's boy Danny Garcia fighting Mauricio Herrera at the
Puerto Rico.
Rubén Rodríguez in Bayamón, Puerto Rico. That's on the 15th. And then don't forget also you have Pacquiao Bradley coming up, right? That's April 12th.
April 14th. 12th, yeah.
Yeah, and April 12th, and then June 7th, you got the Martinez and Cotto fight coming up, which, you know, they have it billed as Cotto Martinez, but Martinez is the champion, you know, and Cotto, you know, he's the one that's coming up to fight Martinez. So
that's at the Garden,
Garden.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's going to be a good fight. But you have, most importantly, I think the next few months you're going to have some good fights. And let's not forget also our boy Triple G is going to be fighting soon too, Doc.
Yeah, our boy Triple G that nobody wants to fight.
And they just signed Bernard Hopkins too. He's going to be fighting April 19th in the DC Armory. He's going to be fighting the guy Shumanoff.
Bernard Hopkins.
Yeah,
he picked out Shumanoff, which is the safest one.
Yeah, right.
Were you aware that Khan had tweeted out Friday that the fight wasn't happening, that he didn't hear from Mayweather's PR?
I heard about that fight.
But so do you think he's going to fight?
Khan is still going to fight Mayweather. You watch.
Yeah. Don't worry. They listen. He can do all the talk. When they say sign the check, he'll ask him what color.
Exactly.
Remember
one thing, that Mayweather has to fight twice a year. So he gets rid of
he's
Khan
be
May.
The tomato can,
And then he'll go to Pathmark and get another tomato can for December.
Hey, no, Dusty won't go back. He's going to get them two for the price of one. They'll be on sale.
That's right.
He's going to
wait for a
4th
of July sale and get two of them.
He said his last fight is going to be in September of 2015. So
2015 next year.
So he's got
the 2015
is going to be his last fight. So
he has to do this year.
I want to come at you, Tim Duncan, one of the great players. I think he being my number of the 10 that you add to the 60 greatest players of all time. Does he go out this year? Or you think he's going to stay for another year?
I think he's going to stay for another year, Doc. I think him and Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, the system that they play in under Pop, you know, these guys can play in that system probably for another 2 or 3 years. I think he's going to hang in there and go at it. They were so close to getting that 5th championship last year.
You know
Let's
what? Seconds away. Seconds away. You're right.
Oh, tell me about it. I was there. 5,000 people walked out.
Not only that, we not only were you there, but Sports and Death had it live. Right from that location here, once again, it was the Wings who brought us immortally right here. We were Blake Radio at the time. He let us know that President Obama had got the store saying. Wings, going around quickly.
Hey, Doc, hats off to the Pioneers. This is Black History Month, so hats off to the Pioneers and all the sports, you know, boxing, basketball,
you know what?
Baseball, football. We just take our hats off.
Yeah, yeah. We're Black History Month. Rosa Parks. So I think I wanted to put a song here. I try to get it next week. I remember the big thing that Althea Gibson talked about, that she was glad when she won. One more than they could say, the tennis champion, Althea Gibson. There's talk about Chandler doing well, and I thought about this, Wings. Is there a possibility that he could wind up in Seattle as a backup quarterback?
I don't see Mark Sanchez taking a backup spot.
Why would you
really? I told you to get a rise out of Lady A. I think he could fit in the West Coast system. Hey, he might end up in Oakland. You just never know. You just never know with the National Football League. I tell you, if they do cut him, I'm going to miss him. I think the guy's a great gentleman. I think that they took they did him kind of bad by removing a lot of his players, but that's just the nature of the National Football League. Real quick, Doc, this is the second day of the combine. Just to give you some quick numbers, Kent State's running back Dree Archer ran the fastest so far at a 4.26 40. Nearly took out Chris Johnson's, who holds the fastest ever at the combine at 4.24 40. Johnny Manziel, Mr. Football, or Johnny Football as they called him, he came in fourth place. Virginia Tech's quarterback Logan Thomas ran a 4.61 40. Johnny Manziel ran a 4.68 40. So tomorrow you're going to see the defensive linemen and the linebackers. So it's been an interesting combine so far.
I have to say, and a lot of speed there. Harold Weston Jr. Harold, shoot at you real quick. The Bradley Pacquiao. Everybody talking about Triple G, Harold. Your assessment of him. Is he as good as they say he is, and what do you like about him if you do?
Triple Z, who's that?
Triple G. Okay, that answers that
question. Gennady Golovkin.
These guys today that they got running around calling themselves fighters, I mean, it's like the public don't know them. You know, like I said, out of all the people that anybody knows is Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather. Out of everybody else, they don't know Ward. They don't know Martinez. They don't know them. Okay? So when you bring up names and trying to make matches and everything, the people don't know them. And as much as these so-called promoters trying to promote, that shows you they can't promote because they can't even get their fighters to even be recognized even in their own backyard. Now, that's pitiful. That's pitiful. If you can't draw in your own backyard, how are you going to draw around the world? That's how, you know, but that's the money-hungry promoters that we have because they, oh, we got pay-per-view. We're going to make money. Automatically, they want to jump out there. But at the same time, they have now in this society, they have brought this great sport down to the ground where it's crawling. Yeah, a few guys are making some money. But this sport was just like football at one time. This is one of the biggest sport in the world at one time. But because of the people that we have running today, the people that don't know what they're doing and don't know how to really orchestrate this whole sport, we are at the bottom of the list. And when we do a big show, everybody say, oh, who's fighting? And that's the attitude. It's not a big hooray about a fight no more. And, I mean, if Manny Pacquiao fights Floyd Mayweather, people might get up for a minute. But nobody's going to get crazy and say, nah, I got to order it. I want to be involved. There's nobody around. When Floyd Mayweather retires, believe me, who are we going to talk about?
Yeah. There was a time. I mean,
you know, talk about
earlier,
Floyd Mayweather III.
You had vibrant heavyweight class, middleweight class.
Look at the state we're in. We have no gold medal champions from the amateurs to talk about. All right? We have no heavyweight in the world, in the United States, to talk about. Now, how
middleweight
could
either.
Yeah.
Dr. Stanley, Sports and Depth, Blog Talk Radio, on the Trust and Guard Network. Rooney returns. Jump shot, Jones, you hit double foul. Howard Weston Jr., Lady A, Cincinnati Stevens, a.k.a. Miss NFL 4-1 run. Bell, Sullivan Jr., a.k.a. Rooney, okay. Little Coco, Dusty, H-Ray, Brown, X. We're going to wrap it up. What's in that? Block Talk Radio on the Dustin Guardian Network. It's Black History Month. And taking, we all look back at those who came before us. Rosa Parks, Dr. King, Abernathy, Gregor, Evers, Hines, Jackie, Roosevelt, Roberts. All the names of the great African Americans paved the way, and so many names that you don't hear so much. But it's the shortest month, but it's
our most important one. And with that, the panel says good night. Lady A, say good night. And what do you got to say real quick before you leave, sweetheart?
No, I just want to say, Mooney, I'm glad that you're back. We really missed you, and I'm glad that God has blessed you to still have you, us to have you around. And I'm just glad that you're still able to come behind the microphone and partake in the show. And to all the fans out there, he's back. You can hold your applause for the next show. So, you know, with that, Doc, I'm going to say goodnight to the fans.
Okay.
And,
okay. First Lady of SLID, the one and only, the incomparable, the legendary, the lovely, Lady A. Jumpside Jonesy, what do you say goodnight? How are you going to say goodnight? What are you going to say goodnight before you leave, Jonesy?
Hey, Doc, I enjoyed it as always. And, you know, let's just keep it moving forward. And, again, you know, we're thankful for those who paved the way before us as we celebrate this, or as we wind down Black History Month. You know, we're so appreciative and thankful to you and all the other pioneers who've opened closed doors and who've provided opportunities for us to continue to excel. But not only just people of color, but all people. And thank you.
All people. Well, you know, the great line of Mandela says, we are our brother's keeper. Our brother's coming all colors. The pioneer, Harold Weston Jr. What do you say as we say goodnight, Al?
Oh, I'm grateful for God and grateful for the gentleman that's on this mic with me, and hope we all just live a respectful life and live long as long as we can, and enjoy life as we go along, because that's what it's all about. Be healthy and be happy.
Double Barrel, Harold Weston Jr., the only African-American matchmaker in history, Master Regarding, the greatest matchmaker. When Harold Weston left, not only did the lights go out, man, Con Edison didn't even come back anymore. Nicey Wiggs, what do you say, baby? Saying good night. Just come back from Puerto Rico with your two lovely daughters and the football maven in mind of our area here. What do you say as we say good night here on Sports and Death? Live Talk Radio on the Trust and Guardian Network. Wings?
Yes, he's gone.
Cool.
Okay, I thought Hello. Wings left. I thought Wings.
Wings?
Dusty.
Yeah.
Wings left, okay. I thought Wings was with us. I was looking for Rooney. Rooney left. Okay, Dusty, you're going to give me a quick thought, and you're going to close us out, Dusty. What do you say as we close out tonight on this Sunday here?
Well, it was good. It was good to argue some more. I mean, you get a lot of frustration off your chest, but we ain't going to sell the box.